let us stop. Chairperson of SAA board, if you think you get blamed for everything, let me tell you, this morning, on my way here, I got assaulted verbally, of course, by two of my comrades, not the DA, two of my comrades, about the fact that they can't walk on the cobblestone with heels. As if I personally decided that there will be cobbled pathways here. So I want to, is Frank Jenkins here? I want to put a lawyer's letter to the two comrades concerned that I got nothing to do with it. So don't look at me as if I'm the enemy. Right, having said that, welcome Mrs. Smiani and whoever else is here. We all know most, if not all of you. And there's Peter Maluleke here too from the board. Is this your full team, Chairperson?
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members of the Parliament, the SCOF, the executives and the member of the board that is here, I think this is a full compliment from SAA. Thank you.
Over to you. You're going to take us through. Look, we've got documentation from all the from what I can tell, all the questions put to the board have been responded to. There was also, as you've gathered, representation from OTA, is that I said OUTA, questioning accuracy of a reply. I think you must respond to that, and you have. As a matter of interest, I did check with Alan last night. It's just interesting. Not that it's a crime or anything, but it's interesting. When we got the replies from the SAA, it was after they sought an extension. You recall the committee asked, well, have they delivered? I explained, well, they wanted an extra few days, and I said, fine, have another week. They did deliver late that Friday night. So it was given to members, the deputy minister is on his way, with his national treasury team. It was given to members, I think, on the Monday or Tuesday morning. Now, the exchange occurred between the SAA, Ellen Wickham, and maybe Turbovo, I don't know whether she got the stuff as well, and myself, and I referred it to the committee members via him. And shortly thereafter, OUTA wrote to say, in answers to your questions, the following questions, they had a problem with it, right? And you got all the correspondence I exchanged with them, the minister, deputy minister, DG, the chairperson of the board, the acting CEO. It's interesting, though, that although the replies were not tabled in the committee, OUTA had it, right? Not that there's anything wrong. So obviously one of the members of this committee or more gave it to OUTA. Now, I would prefer that if such things happen, we do it openly and transparently. It's not clear to me how they got it. So the only logical conclusion is one of three options. One, somebody with an SAA who was familiar with the answers gave it to them. Two, maybe somebody within Treasury who had a document that we all have, gave it to them, or three, an MP did, right? So I'm just saying, for what it's worth, if somebody had given it to him, there's no crime about it. You're asking for an NGO to assist you. But they had requested, which is why I want to table this, they had requested to appear before this committee, to which I consulted before my reply, and you've seen the reply, with the advocate Jenkins. If we were to invite OUTA, then it becomes a public hearing. Then we have to invite the unions and those as a group called what? Hands off doo-doo, they'll have to be here and so on. Now, if that's what you want, then they'll decide. The meeting is a follow-up to the previous meeting. If you want a public hearing, we can have one, but I don't think it's necessary at this stage to take such a decision. I'm just explaining to you why we said no to OUTA. It's not a hearing. But nothing stops us as a majority deciding we want to have a hearing or we want to invite certain parties to a hearing. But having said that, it's covered. We can deal with those issues later unless somebody feels strongly right now. I'm just saying it's an unusual thing that's happened. I don't know how OUTA ended up with the answers, but hey, it's there now. We've responded, and Mrs. The chairperson of the board and her team have responded. Welcome, Deputy Minister. We're used to you coming late, so it's not surprising. Over to you, Chairperson.
Honourable Chairperson, good morning. To all the members of the Standing Committee on Finance, the Honourable Deputy Minister, and the leadership from the department, board member of SAA, Mr. Maluleke, the CEO of SAA and CFO, as well as the Mr. Duplessis, who is one of our executives. The media here and present, I greet you all. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, for the opportunity. I would like to thank you very much for the background information that you've given us. I think on a light note, I would like to apologize for walking where I hear we walked in a path that we're supposed to be walking, people like us. We are not too sure sometimes about demarcated areas and so on and so forth, and we do apologize. I also want to note that today is a continuation of the previous meeting, and indeed I hear from the Honourable Chairperson that the previous questions that were asked in this very meeting room were responded to by South African Airways. And elaborately so, the questions were sent back to the Honourable Chairperson. We are open to answering some questions that may emerge from this meeting today. But it does also give me pleasure, Honourable Chairperson, that today we're tabling the annual results, for South African Airways, which I think during the presentation we will be able to note the great improvements. My issue then, Honourable Chair, is the sustainability of the improvements of the annual financial statements that will be tabled today. That is the first thing that, as the Chair of the Board, I'm worried about. But it comes with the territory and the sector as well. There are a number of areas where we have improved greatly, but there are a number of areas where we still need to focus on. But what strikes me this morning, because I've not done any speech or opening remarks, but I'm talking just off the cuff, what strikes me the most with the annual financial statements that we are going to table just now is that for the whole year 2016, we operated the whole year without government guarantee. And that is an unusual occurrence at SAA. There were assumptions that were made as well. That those assumptions projected that we won't be able to operate for 12 months without government guarantee. So it does give me a pleasure. And indeed, I made a loud noise internally at SAA. I thank each and every one at SAA for the contribution they've made. Now, they say good news don't sell, Honourable Chairperson. Therefore, as much as we saw that as good news, but we old people, we still subscribe to that old adage that if you think anything good will make headlines, it certainly will not. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'll then introduce the CEO to take us through the financial results. He will be assisted by the acting CFO, as well as the Chief Strategy Officer that is here, Mr. Du Plessis. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the members of this committee. I am going to take you through the year, the financial results of 2015-16. I think I'll just start by giving an assessment of the year that was. If you look at some of things that we would call the strength in the airline, it was, well, the contribution we are making to the country. Obviously, the report that we commissioned indicated that the group as a whole contributes about 9 billion to the country. And when we look at the supply chain and our employees, we are contributing, although small, about 0.3% to the fiscus. We support about 84,000 jobs, if you look at it across where we do business, in South Africa and internationally. Obviously, we've won some awards, which I will talk about later. And if you look at our record of safety, it stands for itself. Around the world acknowledged as one of the safest airlines. Well, this really thanks to all the people that are working hard in SAA, and in fact across the globe. When you look at our on-time departure, it's amongst the best in the world, and we've managed to keep it that way. And obviously, sometimes people don't like to give due. We would like to thank our shareholder. They've been supportive. And if you look at our cost compression program, as it will be mentioned later, it has delivered, because currently we'll be reporting that there was an improvement year on year compared to 14-15. And our voucher program is working very well. However, there were quite a number of challenges, which I will count but some of them. I think there are two things that we should look at. We should look at what is external and what is internal. Obviously, the weak capital base has been spoken about, and the CFO will point to that, and also looking at our costs, which, when you look at them, 60% of our costs are in dollars, and when you look at our revenues, only 40% of our revenue are in dollars. So there is a 20% gap, which requires good hedging strategies, which we are not so good at. Now, when you look at the domestic industry, we have an oversupply of capacity there due to the entrance of new low-cost carriers, and we have seen a suppression in terms of our margins. And I think these are also reflected in our results. Now, if you look at the places that we fly to regionally, because of the commodity prices that have gone down, we have been experiencing quite a bit of a suppression of our revenues coming from those areas. But it's also important to note or to say that we had a problem with getting our funds out of some of these countries, and I'm talking here Nigeria, I'm talking Angola. We are really having serious difficulties repatriating our monies there, but I think management is focusing on that to make sure that we get those funds that are trapped in those countries. I think one item that I need to maybe mention also, just looking internally in the group, we have taken a couple of hours as executives to look at ourselves because obviously we are running this business. We wanted to check why are we where we are. And obviously there are a number of factors. Some of them have been pointed out, and they include leadership instability. And we've spoken about that again the last time we were here. There is now a term called the Hollywood of Kempton Park. And what we're talking about here is that we've got too many actors in our senior management ranks, and that becomes a little bit of a problem. Again, we need to also highlight that if we look internally, we are looking at loss of skills, and we need to quickly address this problem because, again, it's got a bottom line impact as well. Now, you will see in this period of reporting that our revenues are not as they should be, and we have, again, a challenge in our commercial area, which we are addressing as a matter of urgency. So we want to say that it's really a combination of factors, both internal and external. If we look at the state of the industry, ladies and gentlemen, I have mentioned the issue of the oversupply of capacity in the domestic market, and also we are observing a global shift in air traffic, and that has an impact on our business. We're seeing a lot of consolidation taking place in the aviation industry space. A lot of big players are merging with smaller players, and that makes it difficult for those that are left behind. Now, we see commoditization of short-haul routes. And when I talk about short-haul routes, I'm talking about routes that are less than 2.5 hours. Now, when you look, most of our routes in South Africa are less than 2.5 hours. And therefore, you'll see these pressures that global markets are experiencing, especially in the aviation industry. Now, when you look at the competition that African carriers are facing, when you're comparing it to the world, other carriers in the world, we are experiencing the lowest growth. The highest growth is experienced in North America. And when you look at us domestically, the growth is not there. And also you have overcapacity. And this then multiplies in terms of your growth in revenues. We want to say that although the world has shown improvement as a result of the oil price that has gone down, when you look at Africa as a continent, we've been lagging behind, and this has an impact also on our revenues. Now, if we just look at the company itself, just looking at what we are contributing to South Africa, we believe that SAA is powering economic growth in South Africa because we are linking trading partners between South Africa and the rest of the world. We are also contributing in the tourism space, and that needs to be acknowledged. We invest quite a bit in skills development because we train our own flight deck crew, we train our cabin crew, and we also train our technicians. I think the challenge that we have now, if I look at South Africa as a country, is that you have a duplication of effort. SAA trains its technicians, for an example, if I can use that space. You have Denel training its own technicians. You have SAX training its own technicians. You have South African Air Force training its own technicians. I think the opportunity that is there for all of us is to see if we can consolidate this so that we can be able to provide training for the country, not for the company. We have been trying to cooperate with Denel and the other players which are government-owned to try and consolidate this type of training.
Somebody help with this, but the thing is, it started in 1994. So I don't know when it will finish. Okay, thank you.
Chair, can I continue? It's a 20-year problem.
I take it though you've got nothing to do with this happening. To obfuscate what you are saying to the committee and to hope the committee meeting will end early, right? I take it there's no such thing.
I have absolutely nothing to do with that, Chairperson. I think if we look at the year that we are talking about, we have launched quite a number of routes that year. We launched the Joburg Abuja route. We also launched the Ghana Washington route. We are looking at flying from Ghana to New York. So this is, if you look at our route network, we hope that this will help us raise our revenues. There's also routes that are on the cards, which is Ghana-London, and hopefully this will help us as one of the deliverables of the long-term turnaround strategy to create another hub in the west of Africa. I think if you look at our regional frequencies, we saw an increase in the year that we are talking about, and they've contributed also immensely in our revenues. Again, when we continue and we look at the year, okay, continuing with the year under review, I have mentioned the whole issue of cost compression. We've seen a saving of nearly 3.3 billion sustainably if we look at the previous 3 years. And we looked at our unit cost, which is when we look at cent per available seat kilometer dropping from 7 cents in 7 US cents in 2011-12. To just under 6 US cents this year. I have also spoken about the new routes that we have opened, and also we finalized in the same year the swap deal. We started looking at other ways of improving our revenue streams, and when you look, we have managed through our ancillary revenues to improve our revenues by about more than 100 million, and this will be explained when the financials are given. Again, we need to say that we have seen for the first time a positive operating profit before tax, which really indicates that we are on a trajectory going up. When you look at the performance of the business in its operations, we have won quite a number of awards. I mean, this is now the recognition that we get from our peers in industry. Skytrax is one of them, where we won the awards, including Mango. We also saw some awards in our technical area, where we won an award as the best line maintenance provider in the world in the same year. These are things that within our industry we are proud of because it's recognition from your peers. We also won the Business Traveler Africa Award. And now most of these, we win them in succession. And I mean, the other one is 21 years consecutively we won these. And the others, it was for the first time. I think the importance of winning these awards, though, they must reflect in your bottom line. So we need to leverage on these to be able to see our revenues grow. But unfortunately, even with winning these awards, although we expected revenues to grow, we didn't see that much growth. And I think it's a challenge to us as executives to ensure that these are turned into something positive. But finally, Chairperson, before I stop, I think if we look at the highlight for 2016 is really the finalization of this legacy aircraft transaction. It was impacting negatively on our income statement, and obviously the finalization, and ensure that we don't see those impacts. I will now hand over to the CFO to take you through the results. I must say, Chairperson, I did not arrange this.
But saying that, the more suspicious I get, but that's another story. Can I also alert you, Chairperson? We're obviously very keen to know what your turnaround strategy is. So, in managing your time, I think it's after 10 now. If you can maybe speak for another half an hour, and slightly more if you want to, but you have to, you see, we want to look also at, you know, the main point raised last time is, okay, tell us, what is this board going to do that's different from the previous boards, and how you're going to do it? So it's about your strategy for turnaround. That is very important also. So I'll leave you to manage your own time. But say another 30, 35 minutes. Thank you.
We are working on
something about that disturbance. I don't know if somebody else has to go and help her, or she's a bit soft, you know. Can we negotiate with them, Cindy, that it's only up to 1 o'clock? Then they can break the building down after that, it's fine. But this is the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson, please allow me to start with the high-level officials for quarter two of year 2016-17 financial year end. As the acting CEO has highlighted that we do have challenges in our revenue, we are happy to say at EBITDA level, meaning at earnings before interest and tax for quarter two of 2016-17, we budgeted a profit of 221 million and we recorded a profit of 206 million. That is a positive move, Chairperson, but we do have challenges in terms of revenue. Our revenue as budgeted has we have a shortage of 1 billion. That 1 billion, the majority of the shortage is coming from domestic, Chairperson. The domestic revenues, the factors that affected the operation and the contribution to those losses, it's more the competition that has intensified across the board, the introduction of two low-cost carriers domestically, together with the international competitors, Emirates, Ethiopian Airlines, Qatar, that are flying directly to Durban and flying directly to Cape Town. That has neutralized the average fares, and we have then seen the bleed financially on the domestic route. We saw a 4% decline on the revenue. The 4% decline on the passenger revenue, when you convert it to numbers, it gives you about 159,000 passengers. So there's a shortage of 159 from the budget, Chairperson, but we are happy to say that has been suppressed by the cost that we have achieved this time. We had a saving of 1 billion. That 1 billion is made up of many factors. One is the saving on the fuel. The other one is the cost compression that the acting CEO has highlighted in terms of this 1.1 billion that we've achieved in the current year. And we also need to take into account that we are happy with the performance, especially taking into account that when you compare this quarter two for year 16-17 and you compare it with year 15-16, there's a 14% decline on the exchange rate. So there's a devaluation of the exchange rate. Especially when our costs, 60% of them are in foreign currency denominated. So in terms of quarter two, we are pleased with the results. But when you go further, we then posted a loss. We budgeted for quarter two a loss of 61 million. We ended with a loss of 765 million. It's more because one of the factors is the interest rate that we have paid, which is about 288 million. That shows a heavy reliance
on the government guarantees, because the guarantees, when we get them from the shareholder, we go to the financial institutions and apply for the loans for the airline to operate. The other part of it is the foreign exchange gains and losses. On the foreign exchange gains and losses, one would ask if we are not hedging. We are hedging the forex, we're also hedging the fuel. That hedging is effective, but there is a component there that you cannot hedge in terms of the accounting, and you have to mark to market on a monthly basis. So that gave us a loss this quarter of 592 million. One of the things, Chairperson, that I wanted to highlight, especially on the domestic as well, was you look at the average load factors. We budgeted that we're going to hit 77% on the load factors, but we were below by 2% on that. Chairperson, those are the highlights of quarter two results. As much as we highlighted that we do have shortage in revenue, as we highlighted when we were here in September, that there was a shortage in revenue as well in quarter one, we are approaching a peak season, and we are hoping and working very hard to ensure that we'll close the gap. We might not close the gap 100%, but we are very optimistic that we'll close the gap. Chairperson, those are the highlights and the results for quarter two. Allow me to take you through the financial results for 2015-16. The highlights for the results, Chairperson, is the group as well has performed better at EBITDA level, again at earnings before interest and tax. Here I'm comparing 2014-15 and 2015-16 numbers. If you look at our revenue is stagnant, has only grown by 1%. As I highlighted that there were challenges, the major contributor on those challenges, as I've highlighted earlier on, is the domestic. Regionally, we are performing well, but as CEO has highlighted that we do have challenges. There are certain countries where our monies are tied. We've got, for example, in Angola, as at October 2016, we had $38 million that is tied in Angola. That's our money that we'll be using in terms to do the day-to-day operations. But we are happy to say, at EBITDA level, meaning at earnings before interest and tax, we posted a positive 351 million versus 2.4 billion that we posted in year 2014-15. But if you scroll down and you look at the losses for the year, which is at C5 level, we posted a loss of 1.5 billion, if you allow me to convert. 1.5 billion versus 5.6 billion losses that we posted in year 2014-15. Two extraordinary activities that happened, if you allow me to use the old accounting terms, because extraordinary activities is an old accounting term, is the impairments. Last year, we had 1.9 billion impairments. Those are relating to the A320-200 that we received. You would recall that we received those aircraft at stagnant patterns. In year 2014-15, we received six. And when they arrived, the aircraft, because those are legacy aircraft, where we concluded the aircraft in the contract in year 2000, and it had escalation clauses. So by the time the aircraft came to SAA, the market value was way below the price that was paid, so we had to impair, and the impairment hits income statement immediately. That's 1.9 billion. In 2014-15 as well, the second extraordinary activity is there was an increase on the litigation, so there was a provision increase that related to 2014-15 where we had to adjust our financial statements, Chairperson. Just allow me to just give you a brief background of analysis in terms of what has made the revenue to be stagnant. If you look at the slide is giving us airline revenue, other income and total income. But I would like to concentrate on the airline revenue. You would see that the revenue for 2014-15 was 28.5 billion. And for 2015-16, it was 28.8 billion. So it only increased by 1%. Basically, the revenue remained flat. And we had a 3% increase in load factors. And the average fares were up by 2%. We also embarked on an initiative where we wanted to increase the ancillary revenues. So that also contributed in that 1%. But we're not forgetting to mention that we are not we're not celebrating with the results because they've declined from 5.6 to 1.5 billion because that is we need to celebrate when we see the revenue increase because you cannot sustain the airline and you cannot be profitable by compressing the cost. If you look at the operating costs, they have decreased by 2.5 billion, which is by 8% percentage-wise when comparing year-on-year. And again, I would like to highlight that 60% of operating costs are in foreign currency denominated. And if you look year-on-year, you look 2014-15 and 15-16, the rand has weakened by 23%. But we are happy to say, with all the initiatives that we have embarked on as SAA, we still managed to compress the cost because you would see that the cost are below 2014-15. One of the things that impacted those positive savings on the cost, as I've mentioned, is cost compression of 1.1 billion target that we have achieved. That amount is sustainable. That amount was audited. And also, there was a Brent crude oil decline of 45%. In 2014-15, the Brent crude oil was $90 per barrel, and in 2015-16, it was 49. So we then took advantage of that. I have done just a high level of our operating cost in terms of what makes 80% of our operating cost. It is fuel cost, employee cost, aircraft maintenance, aircraft lease cost, navigation, landing and packing. If I take you just for 1 second, take you per element, fuel cost you would see, as I said, there was a decline of 45% on the Brent crude price. You see a saving of 2.8 billion on the fuel cost. On the employee cost, we see a saving of 2%. That 2%, one asks, how come we only saved 2% if we embarked on a VSP? We embarked on a VSP, and the VSP process was concluded in October 2015. So basically, we will see the full benefit and the full impact of the VSPs in year 16-17. What is sitting there is more the average increase, a salaries of 6%, and also take into account that other employees are paid in foreign currency denominated. The aircraft maintenance, the aircraft lease cost, navigation, landing and packing have increased. Those are mainly foreign currency denominated. As I've highlighted, they have increased purely because the exchange rate has weakened by 14% when you compared it to, by 23% when you compared it to last year. Please pass the employee cost, the maintenance cost. I talked about the lease cost in the interest of time. In the interest of time, Chairperson, I would like to just take you to the statement of financial results, which is the balance sheet. It's on page 23. If you look at the balance sheet of SAA, page 23, please go to the next slide. Page 23, I'm making a comparison of 2014-15 and 15-16 of the balance sheet. And you would see that we've got net asset, net liability on 2015-16 of 11 billion. That has got a legacy history in terms of the losses that SAA has been making, which has eroded the equity. When you look at the financial statements, yes, the liabilities are more than the assets, which in terms of accounting or law, it's technically insolvent, but it's fair to say commercially SAA is solvent, because by definition, commercial solvent means you are able to pay your debts as and when they are due. Chairperson, we closing on a note to say, despite the high challenging 2015-16, we are looking forward to work hard. We have passed 6 months of year 2016-17, and we are working with the shareholder, the new board, in stabilizing and putting the airline on the right trajectory. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Can we focus now on the strat plan and we look at the whole issue? Your turnaround plan.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you. I think the first question that the Chair raised was what would the board do better, or what would the new board do that is different from the previous board and the plans that are in place. I think it is safe to say from the beginning that we have established a turnaround strategy committee comprising of the new board. I think when that board was, board committee was established, it was at the board meeting on the 28th, on the date of the AGM, and in the presence of the minister and the deputy minister. And it was clearly outlined as to what is expected. And therefore, currently that committee is reviewing the current turnaround strategy. I can safely say that this month alone, they have met three times. In fact, yesterday was a turnaround strategy committee meeting. But without saying much on that particular aspect, I'm going to ask a member of the turnaround strategy committee that is here and present, Mr. Maluleke, who can probably outline a few plans that are in place in ensuring that the strategy review, as well as what their plans are in terms of ensuring that the airline is being turned around. Maybe after him, then we can also ask the chief strategy officer next to him, who is responsible for the implementation through our dashboard, the implementation of the current strategy. So I think I'm going to, with your permission, Honorable Chairperson, I'm going to request Mr. Maluleke to take the committee through. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just say to the committee that at the moment, this committee that's reviewing or assisting the board on the review of the LTTS is really busy with a consultation at the moment. We are consulting with various stakeholders as well who will help us to assist the board to finalize on the LTTS. So we are really at a very preliminary process in dealing with the LTTS. But you also asked, Chair, what is it that the board will do differently? And I think it would be important to say to this committee, because the acting CEO earlier on spoke about the actors in SAA, that the Committee on Human Resources, the Board Committee on Human Resources, has already started the process of identifying and appointing a full-time CEO and a CFO. We also have from the SECO committee, that is the Social Ethics and Governance Committee, discuss the commitment or adherence of the board to ensure that there are clear lines between the role of the board and the role of management. That there will be no situation where there's confusion as to what it is that the board is supposed to do and what it is that that management is to do. For instance, on issues of procurement, which are very crucial issues, that the board will have no role in as far as procurement is concerned, that is a domain of management, and that we as a board has really committed ourselves to adhering to good governance practices. So that is so far where we are now as the board, and we think that for us to really move forward is that we must create some sense of certainty within SAA, and the first thing that needs to be done is to deal with this acting positions that so many people are occupying there. And once we have cleared that, because this really creates some uncertainty within management itself, because once people are acting in positions, they don't really feel that they have this responsibility to actually ensure that they do the work that they are, that they've been deployed there for. Thank you, Chair.
Whenever you implement a strategy, it's a continuous process. It's not something that is static. The CEO have mentioned, the interim CEO, of the acting CEO have mentioned that we are operating in a very difficult operating environment. Now, that is not an excuse. It just means you need to adjust. I mean, yes, there have been new people operating in the domestic market. Stuff like that happened all over the world. We have seen a massive growth of capacity from the Middle East into all the African markets, reducing capacity, but you will see that the main competitors in the Middle East are also having trouble because there's too much capacity in the market. So when you get to a point like this, it's really important to sit down and determine the way forward. And what we have been doing as Executive Committee, we have had quite a few very intense sessions recently, including a two-day, where we set this out to say, how do we get back on track in the areas where we deviate? Now, I don't want to go into too many of them in too much detail because it's the CEO have mentioned some of them, for example, more growth through West Africa. It is an area of the market that we do believe is totally underserved, and it can assist us in rectifying some of the routes that we are currently having major challenges with in terms of carrying more passengers there. We are looking at optimizing our Central African network. Some work has already been done there, and we are continuing monitoring and expanding some of the areas there. We have regionally, we are growing. There are certain markets where there's still some capacity, and we're optimizing the distribution of our aircraft between regional and domestic. But you know, at the end of the day, you can only sell a ticket at a price that people are willing to pay for it. And what we have seen in the last few years is a massive reduction in cost of flying that has been passed through to the passengers from all airlines. So you have seen a continuous reduction in terms of the average fare. In the domestic market, if you look at just the domestic market in US dollars terms, it went down from $100 2 years ago to $60 this year. And all of that is being passed on to the passengers. So we need to go back to our cost base. And part of the work that we were doing is to see how can we intensify the cost compression that we currently have. We have looked at certain areas. We have put some serious challenges in front of some of the executives in order to become more competitive. So that has been sent back to look at specific areas where we want to reduce more cost. We're also looking at specific routes. And this is, that's not talk. There is frequent meetings in terms of revenue to look at ancillary additional ancillary revenues and additional services we sell, because that is the way the world is moving. If you want to sit on a specific seat and you've got a big preference, please pay us a few rand for it. You won't mind, we won't mind. So where we're going there, there's a big drive on ancillary revenue to see how we can optimize the product we offer in the market. We're looking at right-sizing the distribution. As we've mentioned, there's commoditization of the domestic market, the space between which flights are flying by which carrier within our brands. So yes, there's ongoing work there, and all of this then feeds back into the different processes currently going on with the board, and that will then form part of the strategy being defined by the LTDS committee as well as the board. I hope that clarifies.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Chair. Just on the side of the, with your permission, Chairperson, on the area that I felt that we did not do well, because I think it is important that one shares just one area that I felt that we did not do well is on the area of the KPIs that set out in the shareholder compact. I'm sure the Honourable Chair may have seen that we performed below the target that was expected. In fact, to be precise, I think it was about 46%. But what we have done, we've taken a view that we need to look into the executive's performance contracts that we sign with the CEO and executives, but also all of them are being reviewed so that they are also aligned to what is expected of us as the board in terms of the shareholder KPIs. And in that regard, you would find that initially the executive performs well in this area and with what we have contracted them for, but you find that those were not really linked onto the shareholder compact and what the shareholder was expecting. Another distinct feature that I could also highlight on the side of the turnaround strategy is that it was developed internally by the very people that have been working for years at SAA. That's what makes it different from the rest of the other turnaround strategies. So there is an intimate relationship with this turnaround strategy by employees. The second part is that where we felt we were lagging behind, when we did lag behind in the past, we developed the 90-day action plan, which was a 3-month action plan, which then covered the areas where we felt we were lagging behind. And that was quite a successful strategy, which was a quick fix on the side of areas where we felt we were lagging behind. Part of also areas that we think we are improving is to have looked at each and every area of the business where we felt we are making losses. But also, there are areas of business where we felt, probably there are areas that we can improve in terms of procurement. I think there we were able to identify the areas where there were inadequate control measures on contractual arrangements that had been done internally. We were suspecting at the time that probably there is capacity issues within procurement. We do not know. But also, there was poor contract monitoring and lack of enforcement where the contractors or the those that are contracted by SAA were not doing well in terms of ensuring that whatever that they are not doing, like for instance the pilferage, it ended up being a cause for SAA's concern that we are paying for losses, for package losses, yet there is a company that is fully contracted to look after the baggage. And that pilferage was not, the money that SAA was paying was not coming from the contractor that was appointed to, or is appointed to look after the baggage losses. But the pilferage has gone down at SAA. I'm sure you will see on the numbers. Also, there were shortcomings in the tender processes. You will note that most of the tenders, I'm sure you will note from the EY report that you may have received, because there has been a thorough forensic investigation into procurement, where you would find that there are shortcomings in the tender process, or SAA keeps extending contracts without going out and testing the market or ensuring that really we are getting value for the goods and services we are receiving. Also, there was invoicing concerns. Those are being addressed because the Ernst & Young report pointed out at a number of things, and those number of issues and concerns and recommendations and their findings have been discussed, but also they need to be implemented by the executives in terms of remedial action. But also, there was inadequate monitoring of goods and services procured. You did not know whether you were duplicating the orders or whatever that you had ordered, you did get it. And also somebody was standing up and checking whether whatever that has been ordered has been supplied in terms of the quantities and the numbers. I'm sure the chair will recall that it was on the media about the wine procurement, where the wine that we were buying was found in the house somewhere, in the backyard somewhere, one of the senior employees of ours. But with these forensic investigations into this, we were not investigating people, but we were investigating losses as to, for all the years, why SAA is in a situation where it was and it is. We also did the forensic investigation into financial losses. Honorable Chair, it was a grave concern for the board to discover that we sometimes have ghost employees that do not exist. Like, for instance, we've had employees in Malaysia where we don't operate. So those are areas that this particular board is working hard to ensure that it addresses. And anything else, we are really willing to share with the committee, whatever that we need to share. Thank you.
Do you want to add anything? Particularly, I see your hand here. and yours, and Mr. Mania, and Sophie, so yeah.
Look, I mean, Chair, we've given the board a short-term program, basically. And it's fairly detailed in outline. The first part of it is about dealing with the liquidity challenges. And we're working with them in that area to look at how can we improve the liquidity of the airline and the whole lot of measures that we're embarking on around that. The second part is reviewing the strategy. And I think Mr. Malulaga was trying to outline what they are doing with regards to that. The point, though, is that there has been a strategy, the LTTS, and what we're actually arguing is that look at it and check whether it is still valid, do we need to update it and change it, in what areas where we need to change. Core to that process is obviously the fleet plan, and the issues of look at your fleet plan again, look at cost containment, obviously is a major challenge, is a major issue around that, and a whole range of other areas that they must look at. I understand that I think we gave them a target by the end of the year, I think by December, that process must have been completed, so that as we begin the new year, we will be engaging on what is being proposed, what they are putting on the table around that. There's also the question of appointments of competent executives. As a matter of urgency. I think Mr. Manulika was talking about that. We're saying that they should work on that as an immediate intervention to try to bring capacity within the airline and also to ensure consistency in terms of the things that they need to deal with. In order to actually crystallize this thing, the structure of the board, the new board, had to be looked at, and that's why we proposed the setting up of a special finance committee. And I think that has been done. We also proposed a committee that's specifically focusing on the strategy and the turnaround that has to happen. That is happening. I must say that I think there's, at the moment, robust discussion on the strategy going on within SAA, but also between SAA and Treasury.
around what are the options and what do we need to look at, etc. Another probably difficult area is rationalization of SAA, but also of SAA shareholding in different entities and so on and so on. There's also work that's happening in those area, in that area, and the difficult question of whether you need a private equity partner, whether you need recapitalization, in what form will it take, where will it come from, and so on and so on. Those discussions are going on between SAA and Treasury. Thank you.
The sequence we've got, right? Mr. Lees was the last question. Okay, over to the people. You know the order in which you're going to speak.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the presentation by SAA. And also appreciate that we are on the same path, all of us, that we are taking from where we left in the last meeting. We wouldn't like to see ourselves, you know, going round in circles and having no progress moving forward. We also, Chair, I think we need to recognize the better performance of the SAA in certain areas, as indicated. The decrease in loss for 5.6 billion to from 5.6 billion to 1.46 billion is a huge improvement according to Mitch. And looking at slide 10 of the presentation, operating costs decreasing from 32 billion to 30 billion also. But there's a question that I have in relation to the improvement and the performance of SAA. And still, according to me, Chairperson, there's a huge loss of 4 billion rand in one financial year. So my question relates to that 4 billion rand. I had a question in my mind as I go through the documents that we received as to what happened, but the acting CFO have just given me an indication as to what happened, the extraordinary activities that you spoke of. But my question is this sustainable? As much as it's good and we appreciate that there's something positive happening in the SAA, how sustainable is this? And maybe looking at the end of the financial year, 31st March 2017, what is our expectation? What do we have? What can we expect from your performance? So the main question here is sustainability. How sustainable is this? Chair, looking at the KPI, I know the chair of the board has spoken about the performance in as far as the KPIs are concerned. Of the 46, they were able to achieve 21. An achievement of 46%, as also recognized by Chairperson. From the board, the new board that we're speaking to, how do you intend to change this performance? I'm taking into consideration what the Chairperson has said. And I want to believe that there should be remedial actions. The Chairperson is talking about the performance contracts. And I think that's one other thing. You can have performance contracts, but if you don't monitor, you don't evaluate, you might not be able to achieve what you intend to achieve.
So that's the whole thing about the turnaround strategy on slide 24. But I also want to appreciate what this board is doing, you know. I think the team spirit will help the SAA. I liked what Chisa is saying. The strategy was developed internally. People participated in developing the strategy, so there will be a buy-in, there will be an ownership of the strategy. So I think it's a good thing that it was developed internally and people will own it up. The two audit firms, PwC and Gogi, they have made some findings. And I want to believe, Chair, that 7 months down the line, there should be something that we are doing as SAA. There should be something that you're doing in response to the findings and the recommendations of the auditor. I also want to know, Chair, if SAA has the internal audit. Do you have internal audit committee or internal audit unit? And how functional is it if you do have that? Chair, according to the report, the audit report also, there's a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Especially due to criminal conduct of about 5.9 million. Then my question will be, what are the problems? I mean, what were the consequences of that? I think there should be consequences if such things happen. One would like the SAA management and the board to share with us if there were any consequences in as far as that is concerned. And I would also like to know if there are problems at SAAT. Because there are penalties of 26.9 million due to Tax Administration Act and 8.2 million due to late payment. According to me, Chair, my vocabulary, I think this is a negligence, subject to be corrected, but I believe it's negligence, and it's costing the company, and there should be consequences thereof. The CEO and the DM spoke of the executives. And this is something that we have been raising, even in the last meeting we have raised. And I'm happy that as you make your input, you're responding to that, the issue of the acting executives, the appointment of the strategic positions. Maybe what I can say, lastly, Chair, is to get a commitment from the SAA as to when can we expect this executive members to be appointed, and you know, putting an emphasis and agreeing with what the DM has said, that we expect people with high skills, experience, relevant experience to be appointed on those positions so that we can see a better SAA. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson. This time you well. It's good to see you that you're well, as compared to the last time you had. And it's good to see the new board. I need to make anecdotes just to make the meeting relaxed, because I don't want a situation where oversight is seen as punitive. Oversight is not punitive. There needs to be a very good relationship between Parliament and those who account to it. And we need to say it up front, when we're doing our oversight role, we're just trying to make the institutions better. That's the intention. to make them better. And we should also acknowledge upfront that we are on a very sharp and steep learning curve, right? You're not going to get people who's going to glorify you when you're on a sharp and steep curve, rapid. There's going to be, in Africans they say, an afterrand, you know? So I think you're strong enough to take that and to understand that. So some of the things I'll say will basically relate to that. Chair, I have read your documents carefully. I've looked at your achievements in relation to your earnings. And I want to make a comment. You see, it's fine to have 351 billion, but that was before paying all the interest and costs, right? When at the end you had 1.4 billion. Now I'm going to tell you why. It was cost containment and so on. That shouldn't be the base of your revenue, okay? Your main objective should be the driver of your achievement. And that's where, if you remember my last comment, spoke about the need for you to enter the African market. You can't base your profitability on cost containment measures. For instance, you only achieve 2% in terms of your FM. And luckily, because of the lower cost of the Brent crude oil, you realize savings. It will not stand there all the time, CFO. It will change. And if it changes, it's going to change your books. So the strategic objectives and the turnaround strategy becomes your main focus. I'm not trying to lecture you about how you can be profitable. And you know why I'm doing this? I'm going to change focus from the board and I'm going to go straight to Mr. Du Plessis. I'm not impressed by your input as a strategist. Because, you see, I'm interested to know your cost base. Whether are you hinging? Do you have hedging strategies? Because that's where the issue is, Chair. That's where you need to pay much of your attention to the cost strategy. And these are the aspects that must bring that turnaround. Right? And this is where we're going to pay much focus on. Not how much you spend, how much you save. It's those cost drivers. The anecdote, Chair, I want to share with you, I shared with my colleagues. I happened to lie in a hospital. You know, sometimes it's not so bad to lie in a hospital. I met somebody who did not know I'm a member of parliament who comes from a rival airline. And when we exchanged pleasantries, I said, okay, fine, I'm working for parliament. He says, I'm from an airline, I'm not going to mention it because it's your rival. I don't want to promote them. I promote SAA. So, And he said, you know, we're about to get into the African market. I said, no. It can't be. This is our space. This is our space. Right? Now, we need to hear a very rigorous strategy that gets into the African market. And I'm speaking with passion when it relates to that because I'm remembering the MOUs we signed in my previous life when I worked for the DTI. When certain presidents of countries were saying to us, South Africa, come here, come and take this opportunity and invest here. And I will not care if you experience losses in the first 5 years to get familiar with that market. I'll defend it. I'm sorry, DM, to speak like that. You from National Treasury want to make sure that money is kept there. It's possible. In the first 5 years, if we don't realize dividends, I'll take the blame, Brapid. I'll say I'm the one who made that suggestion. And I'll tell you why. If these companies can get in there and see the potential, why can't you see the potential in those markets? It means there's something that they are doing better. And I'll tell you where is the better part of what we need to do when you want to realize liquidity. It's the very same commitment that your special finance committee will look at. This committee. And you see, DM, the time has arrived whether you want to speak about recapitalization or equity shares, right?
any business for it to succeed, if you can't capitalize, you go for equity shares. You get somebody who can help you to build. I'm just being, and Comrade Fritz will agree with me on this. He's been a businessman. You know what I'm talking about. Well, I was doing it at a very low scale. I can't go strategy, so I can't speak with authority on that one yet. Because I ran door-to-door, so, but I know I will ask somebody to give me money to pep up and boost my business. So we shouldn't be shy to start looking at it. But our targets, that's another issue. Chair, don't be shy to fire anybody who can achieve targets. You had 46%, at least if you achieve that 54 that you did not achieve. I mean, that's 21 out of 46. The loss is 25. And somebody is not so well to get a bonus. Somebody did not achieve. So we can't have excuses for such type of performance of those individuals who can't give us, Mr. Du Plessis. If they can't give it to us, then they must choose to go somewhere else. Because you know why I'm saying this, Chet? These are the people who are hampering transformation. Maybe there are some people out there who can do better. And they are not seen as having these skills and what and all these things that you say. And now I'm starting to sing my old song, the cadets program. I am not going to bow down from the fact that we need to transform and have... Well, I was telling the chair, I saw a beautiful young Nigerian woman pilot. And I've not seen many of them. I don't know. I'm belaboring the point, DM. I'm belaboring the point because I want to see young, pretty faces in those buoyings, in charge.
They don't have to be pretty, whatever
they
that
must
means.
Be pretty, okay.
No. That's against the constitution. We are a gender-sensitive parliament and government.
Okay.
Whatever. Young women,
are you
sure
that African women are pretty? I mean, they're all pretty. At least I'm a woman, I can say it. So if you said by men it was going to be a big issue. That's not the point, Chair. Here's the point. We also want to look at the fleet plan. Maybe when we come and meet the next time, we should be discussing this. Dick already raised the issue of competent people's capacity. I cannot raise it again. It's an ongoing matter that we will look at. The other issue that I wanted to raise, don't increase your debt because you won't afford it. I'm being honest and frank. Don't increase your debt because you won't afford it. Try to minimize on that. Because I looked at the books, the way it stands. I don't want to smile, DM. I know you'll be very happy when I say this because you will not give them more guarantees and so on. But I think you've done well so far in trying to live within the limited means that you had. And you could see when you apply cost containment measures how we can afford to juggle around without putting more pressures on your airfares, and you did well. But then let's focus on this one that we have not yet attended to. Okay, so let me pause a bit. I made recommendations. I did not just ask questions. So I made recommendations. I hope you are...
Yeah, except for the one thing that's inconsistent. Yeah. Fine. Who's next? Is it Sifiso or Mania? Whatever. Yeah, just Mania.
Thank you, Chair. I've just got five questions. The first question arises from the Chairperson's letter to me on the 19th of October, which addresses, as she well knows, reasons why she will not resign as the Chairperson. I'm not. Now, I put it to you, Chairperson, that it's common knowledge, contrary to what you say in the letter, that the shareholder represented by National Treasury did not want you to continue to serve as Chairperson of SAA. In fact, it's the last thing on earth I think the National Treasury wanted. And yet, here you are, and you've been reappointed. And the question is, how did that arise? And so my question to you is, did you...
Do we have any point of order in this meeting? No, really. No, Chair, I'm taking exceptions now. I think here we have a board, a new board that you want to engage. And David, for the third meeting, I can count the days. The only thing that David is obsessed with is the chair. Maybe he likes it. David asked the chair continuously that she must resign. David, what's the problem with the chair? He has a board. He has a board. Make the board to account. Here is the full complement of the board. Do you like her?
That's not a point of order, but look, can I plead with you, David? Mr. Mannion, you've covered that ground. Is there something new you want to say? Something new. And don't be like, you see, at the moment, right, even you will acknowledge, surely, that there has been some improvement. We might disagree on the extent of the improvement and what its sustainability and meaning is, but surely, even you can see nothing positive in the world, let alone this country, right? I suspect, but I'm not a psychologist and I'm not playing that role. So I'm just saying to you, can you please ask us something new related to her chairpersonship, while recognizing there's now a full board and she is not above the board. When there was an interim board and so on, there were questions about her relationship with other board members and so on, and some people left. Now there is a full board. In fact, we're asking, as you know, GM, and somebody's going to hopefully raise that. If they don't, I will. About what's happening about, we think there should be an aviation expert, right? Now, do you want to say something, Jim?
I think I just want to reiterate my response when this question was raised. I said that, I mean, there is always a number of iterations when we decide on matters like this. What is important is what is the final decision, which is taken by the cabinet collective. And the collective of the cabinet, with its full senses, they came to the conclusion that the board will be constituted as such. The second point I made was that, look, I mean, you can single out, the board is as good as the collective it's constituted of. So if you can single out a number of individuals, they might have weaknesses as individuals and strengths as individuals, but we think that the collective as it stands would be able to carry us forward. The third point we made was that the appointment was made with a definite understanding that we want continuity, in a sense. So we're saying that this is actually given a one-year period within which I think you actually ensure that there is enough space to hand over the capability and the knowledge base and the institutional memory that's sitting with the chair to the new person. And I think that, at the end of that conversation, I urged Honorable Menir that we must strive to depersonalize these things, otherwise we might end up nowhere. Thanks.
Yes, I want to interact with what has been presented here. Should I go ahead? Well, that's fine.
I want to say, it's not just about this question. Can I draw your attention to this? You have been giving voluminous documents. Can I be frank, Ms. Neary? I don't think any parliament in the world, people are going to be able to read all of this, right? It's a lot of work somebody's done or a team of people has done. Hands up those of you who read every line, every word of this. Let me confess right now. And there's the media there. I see Craig there. I don't know the other journalist. There's Donald next to him. I don't know. And I don't know the other journalists, the newer journalists. Hey, I haven't read it. And you can't expect me to read this. So you ask these questions, colleagues, as a collective, I take it we've read it. We are not traversing ground that has been covered. Not just about your question, David. We can pick up on the answers. So I'm saying to you, you've heard the GM, you've heard Sandy, you've heard me. Can you focus on something new? If you want to, it's your right to raise questions about the chairperson's role on the board, but nothing you're saying hasn't been covered before, three times already. Thank you.
Chair, now we know why the Deputy Minister is the Deputy Minister. He's answering a question I haven't asked. Let me just ask the question and then let's get beyond this. I understand where you want to go and I have five questions. Right. But you will acknowledge, Chair, that I'm dealing with a document which was furnished to us as part of the package. Correct. So my question is, the chairperson says to the board that she had nothing to do with her appointment. The shareholder, in this case Cabinet, appointed her. My question is, how did that arise? And my question simply to the chairperson is, did she or was she in contact with President Jacob Zuma or anybody close to President Jacob Zuma? Was she in contact with any Cabinet member or any person close to a Cabinet member to lobby for her position and for her appointment as the chairperson of, or the reappointment as her chairperson of SAA? So that's the question. The second question concerns the role of the executive. Clearly the shareholder and this committee have been concerned about the fact that it appears that the chairperson immerses herself in what are properly executive functions. Now this has been partially addressed by the board, but could we have a guarantee from the chairperson that she will not immerse herself in functions which are within the scope of the executive of SAA? That assurance would be very welcome. Good. Well, next, in the letter on page 6, you refer to two investigations. One investigation into financial losses at SAA, the other investigation into procurement, which you traversed earlier in the session. I wonder whether it would be possible to hand us copies of the reports of those investigations. That's the third question. The second last question is, and this was raised by the chairperson, I've been most intrigued by the hands-off doo-doo campaign. I wonder if you played any direct role or indirect role in supporting or orchestrating the hands-off doo-doo campaign and the subsequent negative leaks about the pilots union at SAA. And then the last question, I'm sure you'll be delighted to hear, Chairperson, is if you look, what worries me about your letter with respect, Chairperson, is that it seems to be an exercise in blame shifting. The failure at SAA is the responsibility of the Americans, the pilots' union, and a whole lot of other external parties. My question is, do you as chairperson take responsibility for the failure at SAA, including the 7 billion rands worth of losses over the last two financial years? And the fact is, and the fact that contrary to your presentation, SAA is now Africa's second best airline.
Next, I think it's a piece, all right?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, DM, Chair SAA and your team. Thank you for the presentation. Chair, before I proceed with my inputs, can I just agree with David on one thing? David, I'm also very much interested in the reports that SAA referred to. I definitely would like, we should be finished with those reports and see what the outcome and recommendations were. In the presentation, you speak about the impairment of 1.9 billion rand as CFO, which is as a result, the timing results from the time we entered into the contract and the delivery of the aircraft Was this a once-off, or are we still going to see it going forward? And then there is a, when you talk about the cost, you said 60% of your costs are foreign currency denominated. How much of the revenue is foreign currency denominated? I just want to see what's the cancellation there. Chair, I took some time looking at the financials of the subsidiaries, so I'll be making most of my inputs around the subsidiaries. SAA City Center, there's a decrease of revenue from 17 million rands to 8 million rands, resulting in the loss of about 977,000 rands. So the question is also very clear that the targets there were not met. Can you know what the problems are at SA City Centre? Because they do have a direct impact on the holding company. It looks like it's a cost centre of some sort. It's not a business, just a cost centre. I would also like to understand the strategic role of SA City Centre in the bigger scheme of SAA. HF, if you go to page 15, you have got your total assets decreasing from 147 to 112 million rands. Revenue decreasing from 484 million rands to 433 million rands, resulting in the losses of about 12.7 million rands, if I'm correct. They are decreasing from 16.7 to 12.7 million rands. Again, it's a company which is in problem. And as I talk about these problems, I'm also expecting SAA to tell us what are the corrective measures they are taking there. Because I know that we have been always concentrating on the holding company, but it looks like there are a lot of problems when it comes to your subsidiaries. SAA Technical, I'm not very sure whether I missed something. I only have annual financial statements of 31 March 2015. I don't see anything 2016. But I'm sure the picture hasn't changed very much. We see there are losses again. They increased 2014-2015. They have 2014 had losses of about 141 million rands to 190 million rands. As I'm saying that, I would imagine that the trend is continuing even when it comes to 2016, but I'm sure the main question there is that why are we not having 2016 annual financial statements? I was expecting to get a better picture when you dealt with Mango. I'm now dealing with Mango. I was expecting a better picture since we have been told that the low-cost airlines are cannibalizing the revenue of SAA. But our low-cost airline is not doing that. We moved from a profitability of about 38 million rands to a loss of about 36 million rands in 1 year. That's about a 200% deterioration. What's happening there? I think we have been hearing this thing of SAA, the low-cost airlines, but it looks like even our low-cost airline is not doing well. Can the board give us some comfort as to some interventions there? Because you won't be able, I would like to submit, Chair, to deal with the problems of SAA if you are not dealing with your problems of these important subsidiaries. Coming back to SAA, Chair, so much has been said about the evergreen contract of the pilots. I must admit from where I'm seated that I don't know exactly what they entail. Can the board, even if it doesn't do it now, give us some silent features of those contracts? Again, we'd like to know how they compare to other airlines in the world, because we compete in the international market, and what is the impact of this on the performance of the South African Airways? I think we need some, as I'm saying, one, a presentation about those contracts. Two, how do they compare to the other airlines and their impact, and perhaps if they are so important, what is the board doing about them? DM, my pet subject, transformation at SAA. We can't have holy cows where transformation will happen everywhere else but at SAA. Equity employment, especially at higher levels, and in particular when you deal with the pilots, can you be taken into confidence what is happening there when you look at the captains and so on, whether they're in accelerated programs to try and get, it's 22 years down the line, to try and get people from disadvantaged backgrounds to the, 22 years is quite a long time. I'm sure you are able to move from being a cadet to being a captain in an airline. So we would like to know what is happening. Let's get figures. Again, there's a question of broad-based black group empowerment. It's not an option for any of us SOEs that you can do or not do. It's an imperative, the policy of this government, but it looks like at SAA is a nice to have. There is no way we can defend a situation where of the 24 billion rand that is being spent, only 2%, which is about, 480 million rand, which is being spent on BA companies. That's not, it's indefensible. We can't defend it. So again, is the challenge, Mr. Maluleke, that we would like to get plans from the port as to how are you going to deal with this going forward? Or perhaps while talking about procurement and the board's involvement, I heard you making a statement that the board doesn't intend getting involved in procurement. I'm not very sure that that's a correct statement. As far as I know, the boards have got delegations and there's some form of procurement which must come to the board, one. But again, the board has got a responsibility in setting up the policies, right, which are going to deal with. So it's very much a board issue. It can't be delegated to. Perhaps I think you meant something else, right? But if the board can't delegate this one, question of, we say, no, we're not involved. We are involved. The thing is, you must define what your involvement is going to be. But I just thought, I picked that one, and I thought there was something amiss about that statement. Chair, how does it happen that in our skies, you know, perhaps let me start by saying, when I fly SAA to the UK, I fly to London, and then from there I must get other airlines, SAA won't take you from Heathrow Airport, perhaps to Middlesbrough or somewhere else and so on. How does it happen here in South Africa that you have got our skies being opened? What's happening? What are we doing about that? Because I think there is an issue there, but I would like us to be educated as far as this is concerned. Chair, perhaps this is my last one. Three of the major cities in South Africa will be your Johannesburg, your Cape Town, and Durban. I've never heard a very convincing argument. Why is SAA not flying from Cape Town to Durban and vice versa? Can we? I don't understand that. And it's such a busy route, but you have decided that no. Yeah, you guys, you are not flying. So, Chairperson, I think with... So I've heard Mazamba complaining about it, that there is no SAA between Cape Town and Durban. And it's such... Tandipik talks about destinations in Africa. But our own destinations here, which we know for a fact are lucrative, we don't fly to them. So perhaps we can be given some answers. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Next is Floyd.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Not sorry to me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No, the apology is accepted, Mr. Chairman. Yes, no, I'm sure it was, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. My questions to SAA, I'm not sure exactly who would respond to them, because the answers to our previous questions have been tabulated very nicely for us by our own staff. So there are some kind of reference to board and FUMAZA and so on, but I'm not going to direct them to any particular person for this at this stage. Now, the question of the continuation of the good news that you talk about, Chair of the Board, I think is a real concern. I think it really is. And we've talked a lot about cost containment, new routes, profitable routes, not profitable routes, and so on. But the very short term, from now until March next year, in this memo from your own Treasury, the determination was that SAA required 7 billion rand, not 4.7 billion rand. And so National Treasury then organized a guarantee for 4.7 billion and not for 7 billion. Now, how is it possible that SAA Treasury submits a memo to the board and the board then makes a decision that it's a going concern does not require 7 billion, it only requires 4.7 billion. I assume that's how it works. You can clarify as to how it was that the board decided that the going concern requirement was a 4.7 billion when SAA's own treasury stipulated it was 7 billion, and that's only to take it through to the end of March, not for the full 12 months ongoing as a going concern. So some clarity on that. And then, Mr. Chairman, the ENY report, and we've had some discussion about that. Now, I don't really understand how this thing works, because the response to the question says that the report was a draft report, and that's fine, and it was submitted to the board, the executive committee, for the first time in June 2016. But SAA issued a press statement on the 8th of December 2015 stating that the report had been submitted to the board and the board was considering it. So some 6 months later, according to the reply to our questions, the ENY report was then submitted to the EXCO members. Now, this is not a final report, although I'm getting the impression that it has now been finalized, but I'd like to know, has it now been finalized? But how did it happen that 6 months went by from December to June and this report had not been seen by the EXCO, the Executive Committee? And I understand that that E&Y were working on this thing in July last year. So if we really look at it, it's now nearly 18 months later. So we need to see that report, and there are two people already saying that, but I don't understand why there's this huge long delay in this thing. Mr. Chairman, it's now 2.5 months since the new board was appointed. It does seem to me, and I seek clarity, that one of the requirements that was put to the new board was that the suspended officials who are costing SAA millions, not hundreds of thousands, millions of rand, have they been reviewed? Because this report says they haven't been reviewed. And if they have, what action has been taken? Have those suspended officials been interviewed by the board?
I see that the function seems to have been handed over to an HR committee to deal with, but I understood that the directive from the minister was the board would deal with it. So at some stage the board can ask for help from a committee, but the board must deal with this. When is this going to happen? And because we talk about cost containment, but these sort of issues that can be resolved, I would have thought, in a week or two, 2.5 months later, I hope some action's been taken, but I expect that we'll get an answer to that. Mr. Chairman, in terms of the issue of foreign determination of currency impacts on deals, and specifically the Airbus deal, I'm intrigued by the answer that has now been placed before us, because what it says here, and let me read it to you, Mr. Chairman. The risks of leasing from outside companies international is the exchange rate fluctuation. I think that goes without saying. Therefore, even if aircraft are leased from local institutions, these institutions would also likely factor in these risks, as these leasing costs will be inflated in order for the local institution to absorb the fluctuation. So it goes on, but essentially what the answer here is that it really, from an exchange rate point of view, whether you have a foreign leasor, or a local one, the foreign exchange problems remain. Now, in the Section 54 application to the Minister Nana at the time, a great deal is made about saving and not having to face these things. And I'll read to you a short paragraph, out of that Section 54 submission to the Minister Nana. A total amount of $644 million US and an estimated 2.6 billion rand currency hedging is likely to be incurred if the current USD lease with Airbus is implemented. Compare this with ZAR lease, in other words, a local lease, with zero hedging costs, zero, resulting in the saving of an estimated 2.6 billion on day one. Now, how is it possible that we can submit to Minister Nana saying that if we go local, the hedging costs are zero, but in our answer to our questions in committee, the answer is actually either way you're going to pay? How is that possible? Someone's misrepresenting the situation somewhere. Is it to us as the committee? I'm no expert. Or was it to Minister Nan? Mr. Chairman, thank you for that. My other questions, I think, Sufiso has dealt with quite well, so I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I saw in the presentation that was given, part of the strengths and weaknesses of SAA, there was a highlight there that this leadership instability is part of the weaknesses that have been identified. I don't think that with the appointment of the new board, the leadership instability has been resolved, because when we had thought that we're going to be given at least an update on some of the things that we're supposed to be given an update on, there's no clarity of what exactly is happening. So Peter Maluleke is supposed to talk about a long-term turnaround strategy, and he says we're still consulting. Maybe I'm trying to catch Maluleke, but here's what he said. He said they were still consulting, but in the answers that you gave us here, in response to question 18, you say that the LTTS is being implemented and monitored through a dashboard mechanism. And in question 20, you say that there's a long-term turnaround strategy which is
approved by cabinet, which had identified that you need an additional funding of 8.5 billion. But when we are asked now, we say that we are still consulting on the long-term turnaround process. It means that you do not have a proper point of reference on what you have to do and what is expected from you. So let's say that LTTS was not there, but when the new board was appointed, the Minister of Finance, National Treasury, issued a statement on the 9th of September that had 11 conditions that he had to deal with for SAA to receive guarantees from government. That included that you must return the airline to financial stability, you must appoint the CFO and CEO. I didn't hear clearly what you are saying. Whether are you appointing CEOs or CFOs? What is happening? Have you issued an advert for that? And when are you going to appoint the CEO and CFO of SAA? Because it's not a joke that this thing that you have got actors in SAA. It's a very big institution that must be taken care of properly. The acting CEO thinks it's a joke. He says, no, it's Hollywood in Kempton Park. That we must laugh about it, that he says he's in Hollywood. He's MacGyver or someone. I don't know who the Hollywood stars now. He's someone there in the... And then he mentions it lightly, as if it's a light issue. There's a new board. When are you going to appoint a CEO and say, when are you going to stabilize the executive, the people who are full-time, the directors who are full-time in SAA, who must be given a concrete plan. What have you done thus far? Have you advertised and when are you appointing? I'm also interested in knowing as to how many times the board meet since you were appointed, the new board was appointed, and what were the issues that were dealt with? Because I think that the trend that was happening just before this board was appointed is continuing, where one individual is dominant, and that individual is the chairperson of the board. I don't think we must egg walk around the fact that she's nepotistically appointed because she's the chairperson of the Jacob Zuma Foundation. She's incompetent. That is why when we identify problems about SAA, that is a problem of... procurement.
Point of order. Sorry.
There's a problem.
Chair, on a point of order.
Right.
Chair, we will not entertain things in this meeting that we cannot justify. We want to ask questions to the board. A new board has been appointed. We are not going to individualize SAA. SAA doesn't belong to Mrs. Mee. SAA has got a board. The same thing I said to David, I'll say to Floyd. Floyd asked a very good question before, two of them. Let me continue that way. Ask good questions and leave the theoreticals for generations and somewhere else, not here. He's been doing well. When he goes there, we will stop him, Chair.
Do you know, Chairperson? Chairperson, the Companies Act, the King 3, King 4 reports, ultimately hold individual directors responsible for the activities that they engage in.
Now we know that.
The governance institution. So it's sickness to think that we cannot hold individuals accountable.
Now that's
for
not
their
the
actions.
Point she's making.
It's pure madness.
All right, can you raise something new in that
hold
regard?
Individuals accountable.
Fine. Okay, raise
How
something.
How can you talk about a board and not isolate the people who are causing troubles there? It's basic law. It's allowed in terms of legislation that individual board members can be held responsible for their actions. And we're isolating a chairperson now who has been reported to be doing all things. I want to give an illustration through the letter which she wrote to Minier responding to why she should not resign, to illustrate to you that we have got an incompetent chairperson of the board whom, if we are wise enough yet, we should advise to resign and leave the SAA
right.
to people right. who are competent
right.
and will give it proper direction.
Can you please just wait for a moment?
Yes.
He has the right to say that. We cannot stop him.
Chair, I'm rising on a point of
right.
order.
Now, what is your point of order? But I'm ruling that you've got to say something new about her leadership
beyond what has been covered in three meetings, as Tandi rightly points out. That nothing can be applied to Mr. Mania that can't be applied to you, Floyd. At the time, you didn't object, but I said, you can raise something consequential to a letter, that's your right. But don't cover the ground, because then every other answer a person is given from the SAA, we're going to ask the same question again. So, Floyd, you've made your point. We know how you feel. You've said it many times. Can you please move on? What is your point? What has happened since the last meeting to now that points directly to the board chair for having failed? That's a fair thing to focus on. But to raise the thing of how she got appointed, it's all been covered by the DM. Floyd, let's be reasonable. You're a very reasonable guy most times. Just move on, please. You can raise, there is nothing wrong.
Yes.
You have the right to say you think the chairperson's not performing. That's your right. No one's going to stop you.
Can I
do something new, please? Thank you.
Can you make a quick illustration?
I'm rising on the
point of order. I'm moving you out. What is the point of order?
Chair, we're not afraid to engage Floyd. We're not saying Floyd must not question the chair. If Floyd says that the chair has been appointed by Jacob Zuma Foundation, we were not there. I cannot guarantee that, and I can't agree with it because I was not there. Floyd has information that we don't have. It doesn't belong here. Let Floyd ask robust questions to the chair, we will support him. But all these other gimmicks, they don't belong to this meeting.
This is not a meeting, can you please come on. Mr. Mania, do you have to speak?
Point of order. Chair, the question raised by myself and the other honourable member are entirely reasonable. The question about the chairperson's resignation arose in the last meeting. The chairperson wrote a document which was adduced to this committee and serves before this committee. So it's entirely reasonable for both myself and the honourable member to ask questions about the resignation of the chairperson.
But not to repeat the same ground. No, we're not disputing that.
The bottom line is, Chair, that the ANC are trying to prevent hard questions being put to
what?
The chairperson.
We haven't stopped any questions. That's ridiculous.
I'm still on the platform, Chairperson.
Can you please put your hand down, and Mr. Mania? I'm ruling, right? Both of you put your hand down. Floyd, I'm saying to you, you can ask about the chair's appropriate leadership.
So earlier,
from the time of the last meeting to now, but not going back to how she got appointed, it's out.
So earlier you admitted that you didn't get time to read these documents that were given. No, not I myself. I didn't say that.
I said I didn't read everything.
I did read, and part of the documents which I read was Ms. Mieni's response to why she should not resign, and then she traces back why she shouldn't resign. She blames the problems of SAA to 18 years ago when Sakima Tozoma was the chairperson and appointed some Americans and sold the airline, the fleet, and all those things. I'm speaking, Chairperson. I've never interrupted anyone when we were speaking here. I gave them an opportunity to speak. Allow me to make my point.
Yeah, but as long as it's relevant.
That it looks like consistently, when we give correct criticism of SAA in terms of what happened, the Chairperson joins into the criticism as well and says, no, actually, that is not the only problem, so I've got more. It's like being a head of a family and we say that you do not have food, you cannot take care of your children. You say it's not only that, we don't have salt as well. We do not have plates as well. And you are the one who is responsible for providing for those basic things. So why should a chairperson come here to complain about lack of black participation in the procurement process of SAA? Why isn't the board being given guidance on empowered procurement processes? Not interfere, not when there is a contract already of jet fuel, she goes to the suppliers and says that here are the directors that are going to be part of your company, BEE, now you must work with them. It's according to our rules. Without having a proper resolution that is guiding. Chairperson, you can ignore this at your own peril. Maybe it's a few months remaining before she is legally out of the system. But Dudumeni is the biggest cause of crisis in SAA, and if you do not acknowledge that fact, she's just going to degenerate it further.
Mrs. Dudumie.
It's going to degenerate it further. It is not going to recover. There's not going to be anything that will be improved.
But
it will not be business
to do this.
That will change to become profitable. It will not stabilize.
No, Chair. Floyd is out of order.
What
Floyd does not have a right.
And what is he out of
the
order?
Chair with her first name, without specific.
Oh, yeah. The rules, since she's right, as you know, the norm is you in the Rules Committee, we refer to people, especially those who are appearing before the committee, appropriate. So it's Mrs. Mieni or the chairperson. She's right.
But Chairperson, I sit in the Rules Committee. I drafted the rules as part of a proper committee. There's no rule that says that. There's no rule. You cannot show me any rule in the rules book that says that
Frank,
you must
Frank,
refer to them.
Advocate
members
General.
Of Parliament, you
no,
can refer
fine.
To them
yeah.
with a title or not and everything else. But any other person who comes here, we can refer to them with their names. Like I said, you're calling me Floyd. I don't have a problem. My name is Floyd, and that is Dudumieni. And we're addressing it now.
Can you hold on?
Yes.
Can you help us here? Is there a rule that says, in this particular case, she has to be referred to as Mrs. or Chairperson? Or can she be referred to by her first name? I do that with people I know, and they don't mind. Now, Advocate Jenkins, you're the man who advises on legal and rules issues.
The referral of either Honourable or Mr. or Mrs. applies between members. There's no rule that says how you must address witnesses or people make submissions to a committee. That would be part of the committee's proceeding. So I would say the committee should rule on it, but there's no rule.
Right, so there's no rule we're asking you to consider. Just calling a Mrs. Mieni. I mean,
for the first time, this lawyer has given a sound advice.
No.
Honestly, I said Peter Moluleke earlier. I never said Mr. Peter Moluleke. I said Peter Moluleke earlier when I was questioning his issue around the LTTS thing. So, and I'm being referred to as Floyd. I don't think there's anything that compels us to unless if we are honest, leave the dishonesty that is displayed for organizational unity around the president of the ANC, the fake unity that you show to defend him. But here we're dealing with a state entity which is being run down by an incompetent, directionless chairperson called Dudumie, and you are closing ranks for what? I do not know. What do you seek to benefit? The ANC doesn't benefit out of it. South Africa doesn't benefit. No one benefits out of it. The whole entity is being run down. When we complain, she just adds into the complaints that we are raising.
The point. What is your next point?
A resolution that we must take as this committee chair is that we must say to whoever is the appointing authority that we recommend that Dudumieni must step down as chairperson of the board of SAA, and those that are there must continue to take it to financial stability, to the mandates that were given on the 9th of September, and by were given in terms of stabilization of SAA. There are 11 commitments that have to be fulfilled before a guarantee is given. For SAA to have some financial stability, and that is an important thing that has to be done in the immediate. Also, we need to have time frames with regards to the appointment of the CEO and CFO, and then the other executives as well. That there must be concrete time frames that we agree upon. That latest by the end of January or February next year, there should have been the executive appointed. And I don't think that we'll be able to fulfill such if the current chair continues to bully even the new board members, because I know as a matter of fact that the board members were being searched again, like the ones who were there before. They were being told to bring notes when the meeting was finishing, that bring hand your notes here, the notes that you've been taking during the board meetings, because that is how she operates. Why? Because she's a chairperson of the Jacob Zuma Foundation.
You made the point now, what?
So it must be taken
okay,
as a
so
you cannot be held in the ransom by a person who has the proximity to a corrupt president, and then we're now being held at the ransom for such a long time.
So your point is this committee must take that decision, the committee will respond. Right, Makosi, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm not going to get in the space of Honorable Floyd Shivambu, because I think the minister has responded adequately to that question. Chair, you know, I think it's important for me to set out the context under which I'm going to be asking my questions. And that one is that somewhere, somehow, as the ANC, okay, we need to find a way of changing the narrative on state-owned entities. The narrative on state-owned entities is such that it lends itself on creating a fertile ground for ideological persuasions that are pro-privatization. And that is unfortunate, because even Honorable Member Floyd Shivambu, I'm sure he's concerned that sooner or later this narrative is going to be going that route. And therefore, Chair, it's important for us to deal with the structural challenges at SABC. I mean, at SAA. I'm dealing with this SOEs, good Lord. Okay, at SAA. Chair, you know, the point that I agree with Floyd, with Sifiso and Tigeledi, and I think Tigeledi was the first one to speak about it, is the issue around the filling of key vacancies. How do you deal with strategy and a turnaround strategy in the absence of a CEO, in the absence of a CFO? Who should be driving the strategy, who should be implementing the strategy? And again, I know that you were supposed to have your strategic session early in November. Did that take place? If it did take place, what sort of timelines did you put in place in terms of filling these key vacancies? Probably the minister can assist us, because this was a fundamental question that we raised at the last meeting. And there is no way we can begin to sort out these structural challenges at SAA without necessarily filling these key vacancies. Because even if they do go on strategic planning session, when the new CEO comes in, they're going to come in with their own new flavor, their own new approaches, and whatever that you are doing now might be actually fruitless expenditure, because you will have to go over that same process again. So, Chair, the other thing that I wanted to understand, not necessarily, I'm moving away from this thing of personifying state institutions, because it fits into this narrative of our own opponents now as the ruling party that would target specific individuals, focusing on their weaknesses, and then rubbish everything else that might be good about the institution. And I think it's important for us to do that, to move away from this personification of institutions, because it weakens us. Chair, during 2007 and 2008 financial year, I think Kaya Ngula was the CEO at that time. SAA had the four pillars. They had their own turnaround strategy, and they identified their own four pillars, which was more around simplifying, right-sizing, whatever, right-sizing the business, incentivizing staff, and all that, you know? And it changed. The reality is that we've seen these things coming and going all the time. And what bothers me is that the chair also points to the fact that there are historical constraints in your memo to, in your response to many, that there are historical constraints. Now, I don't get the sense that we are addressing those historical constraints. I get the sense that we are now, we are being absorbed by these historical constraints. We are not solving the root cause of the problem, the root causes of the problem. And I'm worried about that, because then that would mean that even this new board is also going to be narrating that same thing. And she's actually saying here, You know, one realizes that the decision taken by erstwhile CEO, management and board set the tone for the underperformance of the company in the next 18 years. Now, that's problematic. Because that means we have not moved an inch from what we had identified as a problem. We are absorbed by the problem. And it kind of helps us to justify failure. And I think we need to address that if we are serious about turning this institution around. The other thing that I wanted to know is around the issue of the leasing of your aircraft. Out of 50, 41 are leased. Now, are these dollar denominated? And if they are, what are we doing about that? Is there a business case that you can make around the leasing or the continuation of the leasing of these aircraft? Is it cheaper to lease or cheaper to have long-term, especially within the context of long-term strategy? We need to understand, because if we are going to be talking about this, it means that if we are going to be, if the leasing of the aircraft as well is one of the leakages of the company, I don't know. I have to be, that has to be explained to me. But something tells me that you are a good, your balance sheet obviously is not going to look that good. And that's my personal view, but you will have to talk into that. You know, Che, I think SAA, in my view, has been able to deal with the issues, the soft issues of customer focus, and hence I spoke about Kaya Nula's strategy, because it was more on customer focus. But the real issues around working capital and liquidity, I don't think we are addressing those structural issues adequately. I also don't think that we are addressing the profitability of SAA. You see, I know that many people think that simply because we are a state-owned company, you can't talk performance, productivity, and profitability. Guess what? We need that. Because the state can't be forever be bailing out state-owned entities. They've got to be profitable. So we need to see something from the new board that is going to tell us that you are addressing these historical constraints, you are addressing the fundamental structural challenges at SAA, which is also the issues around liquidity, and you are also addressing the issues that are going to stabilize and grow this company. It's not okay that, you know, if you look at your revenue and we look at your operational costs, it's a sad story. And if when we went through your KPIs, none of your KPIs were achieved. And that's serious, because how do you talk about performance, productivity, profitability when we are receiving this? And it goes back to the agency of filling the post. And therefore, I agree with the previous speakers who say, until you actually address, fill these critical vacancies, it's a waste of time to meet with you. Because we are going to be coming to us, complaining to us. We are shareholders. We don't want you to hear you crying to us. We want you to come with a solution. All we want you to see something that is looking good, man, you know? So that's all we care about as a shareholder. That's all we care about. We want you to come here and tell us a good story. Look, this is what we've done, this is what we've done. And even as we talk about, you know, even the issues around your performance bonuses, they won't even come up. We won't question them. If you are delivering on your mandate, I am talking strictly as a proudly ANC member, because the problem is that when one of you has a questionable moral conduct, The unfortunate thing is that it has a negative knock-on effect on us as the ANC, as a ruling party, to say we are not capable of governing. And that is why these issues, you have to understand them, that unfortunately what happens in the state-owned entities fits into the ideological contested space. And we don't want you to get into that space. But you are feeding into that space and you are disempowering us. And that is why we are not going to be apologetic now. We are going to be very hard on you, not because we don't like you, because we want the state-owned entities to perform. That's what we want. And if we are hard on you, don't take it personally. It's got nothing to do with you. It's got to do with our own interests. We've got to protect our interests. Chair, the other thing I also need you to know, the risks and benefits of the leasing of the aircraft. What are the risks and benefits of that? And the other thing I also need, because there is something that we need to be very careful about. We have to address issues of transformation. Without doubt, it's very, very important. In fact, if I were to speak against that, I would be fired from the ANC. You know, we need to transform. However, we must be careful about narrating our story in a way that says we are trying to get rid of the current pilot. Because our world, and the acting CEO said, we have the world record on safety. And in this industry, that is your competitive advantage. However we are approaching this issue, we've got to approach it and balance it with the issue of ensuring safety. And perceptions are everything. And many people who've flown here will tell you, perceptions are everything. If you were told that the pilot that is maybe navigating your aircraft there graduated yesterday and you are flying to New York, I'm sure you won't even eat because you will be so scared that high likelihood that, you know, it will crash. So these are the things that we need to balance off. Chairperson, you mentioned a lot of leakages. And there's something that bothers me. I don't hear you telling us, you know, about what are the consequences. There seems to be a lot of leakages that are happening. They're numerous. I mean, some of them are appearing in your response to Mr. Mayne, to Honorable Mayne, and others you were citing them as you were speaking. But I don't see any consequences that are there. And it might be useful for us to share with us your own risk strategy, just a broad overview, to tell us what are your risk areas that you focused on and how do you hope to move forward. And let's hope that this new board is going to set its own tone. Because if you are going to be setting your tone on, you know, getting into this ailing institution and you also become part of that ailing, you get sick yourself, you understand. We don't want you to be sick. We want you to come, you are fresh, you are coming with a fresher perspective. And finally, Minister, we've been saying this thing, we said this thing previously. In your board, we noticed that there's nobody with aviation expertise. When are we addressing that? And if we could also get the comments from SAA on the domestic, the profitability of the domestic routes. I don't want to get into the international ones. I think you've already spoken well on those. But we need to just get a broad overview on what is happening with the domestic outlook. And Chairperson, it's very important for you to remember that we, in as much as we are a state-owned entity, we want profitable state. state-owned entities. People must move away from this thing of thinking that if because, simply because something is state-owned, therefore it must not make profit. The only difference is on the motives for that profit. You know, where do those profits go? You know, and we are not here to, we care about the profitability of SAA. We care a lot. And we are going to be measuring your performance on the productivity and the profitability of the SAA. And Chair, I will stop there. Thank you.
We're running out of time. Oh, Tandi, you answered one very good.
Chair, it's a quick one. We have picked up that SAA is not audited by the Auditor General and is using PricewaterhouseCoopers, which in my view is more expensive, and if you want to deal with cost containment, you will have preferred to be audited by the AG, for instance. And for public interest, the AG audits public institutions. So I'll be interested to know why is SAA, because, and my argument is this, sometimes these private auditors give you what you want to hear and might not point to the weaknesses that you have. I'm not saying in this case it's the case. I'm just saying, why not consider the AG? Thank you.
Yeah, look, very quickly. Firstly, I think, Makosi, everything you said I agree with, except of a slightly different sense of the reservation you have about, you know, we have to wait for the CFO and CEO before you finalize or you get going with it. I think they must start with the process. We ourselves were asked it for the last meeting. But obviously it would be nice if they, and Floyd, we did in fact take a decision, you might recall, that we would ideally, remember I said that it can be prescribed. We said ideally by the end of, actually we did say exactly that. By the end of December, mid-January, you put it back to end of January, you should appoint the person, ideally. And then you explained maybe if Makosi intervened, you'll recall and said, first, you should need to appoint the CEO because the CEO has to have some say on the CFO. So on that issue, I think we're all agreed. Secondly, I think that, look, this is my subjective view. You don't have to agree with it, anybody. Besides sharing, I also have my own views. I think despite all the questions about the chairperson of the board, the truth is, for me at least, not truth, my sense is that between the last time we met the board and the management and now, there is some marginal improvement. The fact, for example, it might sound trivial, there aren't throngs of reporters here, unlike the last time. Implies there's nothing they expect that's sensationalist, right? Last time, I believe, there's cast on ENCA Live and SABC Live. I don't think that's happening today. I don't know. But the cameras don't seem to be swiveling around, so I don't think it's happening. And last time, I got SMSs from journalists checking, you know, is it happening in this place and so on. So, and there's very little in the newspaper, Madam Chair, very little in newspaper of a controversial sort. The one new thing Floyd raised, I hope that's not true, about the way you're managing board meetings, I find it hard to believe given the caliber of board members there now. So I hope that's not happening, but you'll respond. Apart from that, there's no sense one has that it's anything substantially new. The one question that I think one needs to answer in a pithy nutshell way is OTA claims that you misrepresented the information. You covered that in vague ways, but just put it on record here. I'd like you to respond to that because it's fair. When a civil society actor and an individual writes to a committee, we have no choice. We are parliament. We're their parliament. We are just occupying a position here. We're gone tomorrow. We must answer whoever they are, whether they're from the far right or from the far left, is irrelevant. If they're South African citizens and they're not asking a question that is racially insensitive or whatever, they have a right to be answered. So I would like you to put that on record just so that I can write to OTA and so on. Then the next very quick issue is, I think the key issue now, which is why we are trying to engage with Mr. Mania and Floyd Chivambu, you can keep to your views about the chairperson of the board. You have a right to it, right? But we would like, now that we've looked at it, firstly I want to say, my own view for what it's worth is that the chair of a board usually exercises preponderant influence on its success. And while DM you can talk about a collectivity, right? Even Trotsky says, if Lenin wasn't there in 1917, a Marxist, right? The Russian Revolution probably wouldn't have taken place, and you and I know that, right? The individual, if Nelson Mandela wasn't there and de Klerk were not there at that time, it's questionable whether the transition is a historical materialist can say that too. So I agree. It's nothing to do with you, Chairperson. The board chair, the president of a country, the leader of a party, in most cases, no matter what the democratic structures are and so on, exercises preponderant influence, right?
Yes.
Right. Now the thing is, that's true. But on the other hand now, we are where we are. This committee does not have the power to prescribe who should be the board chair or we appoint. We can make a recommendation on category of person. So I think now we must hold the board chair and the board to account in terms of the PFMA. I am now saying, colleagues and comrades, we've covered this ground. Whatever the past is, we now have to move forward and help the board and hold them to rigorous oversight, as Makosi is saying. I would like to strongly suggest, right, that actually the next time you appear before our committee, chairperson, you and your team must present to us, even if it's work in progress. That should be the key thing. Yes, your financials for the last quarter. The key thing is, where are you going? How are you going to get there? Why I think there's been an improvement also is there seems to be a marginal improvement, if more, not more than marginal, between treasury and yourself. You can sense it. Okay? The air is not thick with tension as was the case 18 months ago. You can sense it instinctively, right? Politics is a lot about instinct. We don't have information. So things seem to be improving, as they should, between the board, the management, and the National Treasury. So, DM, we are asking you, you're the port of call here. When you come here next quarter, we want the elements, key elements of the strategy plan, based on the 11 points partly. And I think both Makosi and Floyd are right in my view. What we haven't got enough of, Chairperson Peter Maluleke, there were 11 points given to you. Exactly, you know, in what, some of them you explained the progress, but we didn't get a coherent response. Because you were more preoccupied with financials and a million questions we've asked you, right? Now, this time around, I think what we must do is collectively decide a month before they appear before our committee, which will probably only be after the budget, right? So you're talking about end of February, early March. 1 month before, we highlight 3 or 4 key areas. So we don't ask 4,000 questions and get 200 replies, and what are the researchers supposed to do? So we need to find now a more focused, more strategic way of engaging, instead of asking thousands of questions, you know, and expecting them to reply. I've tried before to facilitate. Thandi knocked me down and said, no, you are steering this meeting, you know, as if I had some subjective ideological imperative. I really think it's done by other chairpersons. Nobody questions it. I've seen it. So I am pleading now to this committee. It's not about SAA. Can we please now become more sophisticated and productive in our exchanges with departments and entities? This thing of 1,000 questions and 200 replies and then 800 answers and we can't even read it. Okay? Floyd, I don't know where he gets the time, says he read this thing. Well, I'm going to test him when I bump into him in the corridors. What was the answer to question 22? I want to see whether that's the case. But in the meanwhile, I really think that we must review the way we engage with state-owned entities, right? So I think privatization is out, right? Whatever the DA and others say, it's out. I think Makosi puts it very nicely. She says, Chairperson, wittingly or unwittingly, you play into two narratives. She's not here, and I'm sorry. I think the two narratives, one is state-owned entities can never function. They're a waste of time. Let the private sector do it. Two, black, mainly Africans, can't govern. And I think that's the point. And in a way, the way SAA was managed until now feeds into that, and we must break away and shift the narrative. I entirely agree with her. So on the issue of rationalization, there's some things that can be done. Surely, Advocate Jenkins, we can say, when you come here next time, tell me if a committee can't say that to a state owner. I think it can. We want to know from you, what are you doing about rationalizing the technical services? You're saying some of them are in the SAAF, some of them are in Denel and so on. Why can't you do something about that? Now, I know Denel falls in the public enterprises and so on. We can engage with Comrade Dipo, she will agree. So can you give us a report back? Deputy Minister, can you speak to Deputy Magwanisha and sort this thing out? Want a report? Rationalizing. Can we propose, before we part with them, 6 or 7 things we want them to do by the next quarter? So already, Chairperson, You and your team are not accosted 1 week before and said, please answer. Let's do it now. Let's take this meeting forward in a concrete way. Let's, before we part in the last 5 minutes, propose 6 things we want done. Okay? You'll have to wait. Okay? I'll skip all this. Yes, I think, to put it mildly, it is utterly outrageous, DM Chairperson, that only 2% of your procurement goes to historically disadvantaged people. It's unacceptable. Unacceptable. So between you and the minister, we want you to report to us. I think Makosi said that, or was it Sipiso? In your set plan, Peter Maluleke, you have to say what you're doing about that. It's unacceptable. And by transformation, as I understand it, people can disagree, we can find a consensus. It's not just about creating, which is very important for the national democratic struggle and for other reasons, for South African security and future and progress, that you create a black, particularly African bourgeois industrial class. That's a government policy. We can, must create that. But empowerment means far more than that. It means not just an elite, it means also empowering others, workers, and other disadvantaged people. When you're giving out tenders to people who are historically disadvantaged, it can't be the same elite that are getting tenders from other state-owned entities. You get the trust, right? Both of you, the chairperson and you, you're well versed to the issues. We also want to see this thing on the pilot. The last time you said that your cadet program has got funding problems, if I'm correct, I can't recall, but it's neither here nor there. Minister, we're saying to you and the board, we want to see more African pilots. We want to invest there. That has to change. So transformation is not just about creating another elite, as important as that is. It's about actually empowering various classes and strata of the previously disadvantaged, particularly African population. So I would suggest that you tell us what you're doing about that, and we can't accept this, really. This thing has to change fast. We know there are vested interests who will resist this thing. We got it yesterday with the auditors. But on the other hand, it requires considerable skill and sensitivity to manage. And we can't keep saying the reason we're under siege is simply because we are deracializing the economy, simply because we're deracializing the sector and the tender and procurement sphere. No, that can't be it. Others have done it very, very well without the contention we've had here, and it seems to be receding. So we welcome that and we thank you. Also on the pilot issue, I can't, there isn't time to deal with an anecdote. But the sense I get, Chairperson Diep, is our pilots are world class, actually. They're being sought. I was on a plane recently from Johannesburg to Cape Town, and I bumped into a pilot. He didn't know who I was, and somehow a conversation got going. On the one hand, we want to know, and I think this is right, because this is such a big issue, Chairperson DM, what is it that our pilots are getting that other pilots, because they're world class and they can be snapped up, is it the case that our pilots are getting things that are substantially different from other pilots, substantially better? And if so, why then aren't we attracting pilots from all the established Lufthansa and so on? They should all be coming here because SA is given some evergreen things and so on. So what I'm saying there, you see, we will be clearer about this issue if we knew what is specifically different from the terms and conditions of the pilots in this airline and ours, our countries, from others. If you knew that, but if it is different, and if it is completely unacceptable outside the norm, then there has to be engaged on it, right? Without losing these pilots, where we can. But ultimately, you're going to find the right balance. It's about fairness. The main point to me, it seems, is to get more African pilots, women in particular, but Africans. And really, in the ANC, we don't speak to the government that you have to be pretty. That was dismissed in the 60s when the women applied. No, we must be clear, for somebody as progressive as Gandhi to keep insisting on that. That was rejected in the 70s, as you know. Women went to the labor courts and the equality courts in Great Britain also and said, what's this idea must be blonde and blue-eyed to be a British pilot, right? That thing is nonsense, actually, and Tandi agrees. She's my friend, and she knows what I mean. So, I think I'll stop there. The Ernst & Young report, we asked you and the minister, Minister Nene, for it, PM. We are told it as we process. If it's available, let's have it. Your structural, your plan has to take out of the historical structural issues. In other words, that has to be a foundation, right? for your turnaround plan. I think I'll skip. There's a lot more jumbled and more erratic than I meant to be because, you know, I'm rushing to put it together. I didn't think it through. So in short, we are saying, Chairperson, now we have to move forward. I agree that there are historical and legacy issues that explain a substantial part of the challenges we had over the last 2 years. But I think you must also accept your measure of responsibility as the chair of the interim board and the one previously. Otherwise, you present yourself as some superhero, and that's really something that's not tenable. So let's now agree that in part, large part, it's structural, historical, etc. In part, it's also perhaps some leadership weaknesses or many on your side. It doesn't matter now. We need to move on. And that turnaround strategy has to look at the structural issues, has to look at the legacy issues, and so on. Now, I'm pleading with members. We're giving them a chance to reply. There's about 20 minutes left. But we want 5 minutes after the 20 minutes, Chairperson, to start structuring our next meeting. And I'm pleading with members, we are not going to function like this. 1 hour of input, 1 hour, 40 minutes questions, 20 minutes reply, written reference. It's actually an absurd. It's a mechanical, artificial, feel good. You know, oh, we are very good, including the chairperson. Hey, I asked so many questions. I wish I had a child who would get impressed watching me on TV. Well, I don't have such a child. Well, I have a stepchild, and he doesn't care what I say on TV. But the fact of the matter is that he's not interested in this. He's more interested in other more important things as he sees it, and rightly so at age 11. But what I want to say is this thing is not helpful to you, the way we are functioning. I've been pleading on this thing, and can people help now? Next meeting is not going to be like this, Chairperson. It's unfair to you, it's unfair to Parliament, it's unfair to the productivity that is required of us. Over to you, Chairperson, DM, and so on. You've got 20 minutes. Issues like the strategy issue, the functioning of the board, meetings, more those issues.
Look, I mean, we share the concerns raised around probably whether the board will function very well or not. In fact, since the board was established, we've had 2 meetings with the board already. That excludes the AGM, which makes it the 3rd meeting. And in all of those meetings, I think after the first meeting we had on the 9th of September, we followed that with a detailed letter to the board outlining what they need to do. And I must say that on the 2nd meeting, we already got a report on how far they've moved on the issues that we put on the table. So there was already progress on those issues. So the point I'm just making is that I think the preoccupation with individual is understandable given the circumstances in which we are in, but the reality of the matter is that the board has been functioning very well so far as a collective, and there is cohesiveness in the board. It's structured, it's focused, and that, I think, I would ask members not to really be concerned about that at the moment. Let's focus on its delivery and output, as it were. To tie up that chair, I wanted to propose that we actually asked the chair, and I'm committing that that will happen, to put together the report of the activities of the board up to now. That outlines, firstly, what the minister put on the table in terms of the issues that we raised and what has happened and has been done on all of these issues to date. And that would demonstrate that there's been a lot of progress in concrete terms. So I'll suggest that maybe in the next 2 weeks or so, we submit to the chair that kind of report so that we kind of lay the members at ease, put the members at ease. The second issue is around the appointment of executives. We actually gave the board very strict instructions on the issue. And I must dare say that the work is happening now. Upon advertisement, I know that they are supposed to be happening soon, and we hope that the whole process will be closed probably by end of January or beginning of February, depending on whether we're finding good candidates for the CEO position. Our view has been that focus on the CEO, and because then you can deal with the rest as you go along in that thing. So we're hoping that they will stick to the program that we have given them.
On the deadline long term, by which, even if it's a tentative deadline, by which you're going to appoint a CEO? Have you got a deadline?
Look, the process is normally long. We can't tie ourselves to a deadline, but I think by end of February we would have closed the process.
Okay, that's reasonable.
The adverts are going out very soon, and after that I think it will determine. I think it will happen earlier than that, but I think Bradley's...
All right, end of February is out of deadline, okay.
The second issue, the third issue, is around the long-term turnaround strategy. Contrary to probably what seemed to have been the impression created, there is a turnaround strategy. What we have instructed the board to do is to review it. So there is an existing turnaround strategy, and they are still operating within the context of that. All what we're saying is that they must review them. We've given them up to the end of January, or the beginning of January, if I'm not mistaken, to actually submit to Treasury by the beginning of Treasury of January the turnaround, the revised turnaround plan, so that Treasury will engage with that. And we're saying that by February, that turnaround plan will be presented to the committee, as it were. And there's a lot of work, of course, that has been done. Apart from internal inputs, there's a number of Deloitte has done some work on the thing, and a number of consultations have happened around that. And I think we'll be able to deliver on that by February, as it were. On the issue of aviation expert, again, I'm saying we are already working on that. The minister is already working on that to find and propose an aviation expert. The search has begun to try to find somebody with those skills. And I'm hoping that within the next 2 months or so, we'll be able to report on what progress are we making in that regard. My last 2 points is, you know, this concept of transformation, Chair, I think we're making probably a point that I don't think, and I get a sense that members are not probably comfortable. Let me explain our position. We are saying in the instruction that we gave to the board, and we are saying that the immediate focus of the board, absolute focus, is to demonstrate that there is a plan and progress in bringing the airline back to financial sustainability. Now, transformation is centrally important. And if you look at the KPIs of the airline, transformation is well embedded. And it's not compromising transformational issues, in a sense, when we say that. The fact that some performance, and there are easy targets, low-hanging fruits around transformation that the board is supposed to be addressing, like how much skills do we develop in particular sectors of society, and we will insist that they perform those because they don't tamper with the immediate challenge of doing that. What we are actually saying is essentially that in actually dealing with procurement issues, in dealing with the decisions around which assets we should be focusing on in streamlining, etc., we think the preoccupation should be about bringing the airline back to financial sustainability. By the way, if we don't do that, even that the ideal about transformation will be thrown out of the window. So I, it's not an either-or, Chair. I think I'm just saying that. I would insist that probably in the session that the board is going to have as part of the strategy and the turnaround plan, we actually bolster the transformation objective. But I think our immediate, in the next couple of months, we will have an absolute focus on bringing the airline back to financial sustainability. I don't think we can probably compromise on that. It's a fundamentally important area that we should embark on as a
board. It's exclusive, we understand that actually, yes, you might have financial stability and transformation, so both can reinforce each other.
I'm also trying to avoid an ideological debate with you, Chair. I'm unlikely to win it, it looks like. The last point, I think, this debate about and privatization and not privatizing, I think it's a tired debate. It's probably, I think people are keeping it in their minds, I mean, for too long. In essence, I think Honorable Tandy raised the issue, I mean, that about in looking at the long-term turnaround strategy, we can't escape the need for bringing new money into the airline. We can't escape that. Nor can we escape the need to bring new skills into the airline. So the formula, there is in a couple of weeks ago, the cabinet adopted a private sector participation strategy for SLCs. And within the context of that, we'll have to explore the mechanisms of ensuring that we actually ensure that we bring new money, new resources into the airline. We also look at the mechanisms of recapitalizing the airline. And when we talk about recapitalization, we make it very clear that we are going to if we are to recapitalize, it would be off balance sheet. So in other words, it will be within the balance sheet of the airline. Sorry, it will be within the balance sheet of the airline. It would not be done in such a manner that it increases deficit in government. So in other words, we will have to look at the airline itself, at the airline. Can I finish? It will be on the basis either of the balance sheet of the airline. It will also at the expense at looking at the non-core assets within our system, and actually out of that we'll then have the resources that we need to recapitalize. It's clear that you moving forward you can't avoid looking at recapitalization as well as looking at other mechanism of bringing new money into the airline. That's very clear. But the discussion is there are a lot of steps before you reach that point. And that's, I think, the message that we're coming through. And all of those, I hope, will be covered in the long-term turnaround strategy. Thank you very much, sir.
Other questions? Peter, are you coming in? Well,
yeah. Thank you. The DM has actually touched on most of the issues that I've noted.
Right.
Yes. But just to add on the issue of the appointment of the CEO and the CFO, that the HR committee has already, interviewed with the CEO, of course, has had discussions with two companies that are going to help us with the recruitment. These companies will be put to the board. The recommendation will be put to the board on the 29th, and immediately after the board has decided of November, then we will start the process on advertisements. Then there was, I won't respond to, but it's not here, so I won't respond to it. The issue raised by Mr. Telezi on the board and procurement, and so I think our understanding is really the same. And then just to say really, the instruction to the board was that we should put aside the LTTS, the long-term turnaround strategy, and then it is there already, Honorable Shivam. For us, really, it was just to validate it. You see, and that's the process that we are busy with. I think that's really.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I would just like to answer two or three questions that have been asked by the members. The first one is, we have improved on the huge losses. Is this sustainable? It is not sustainable. Remember, we said it went down significantly because of extraordinary activities, but what we are focusing on is to grow revenue. And we understand that we can't cut the cost for the airline to be profitable. So we are working on that. The second one that I would like to respond to, there was the question on impairment, whether the 1.9 billion was a once-off or it will continue. It was on 2013-14 and 14-15, and the decision was then taken to swap the A320-200 with A330-300. it then killed the impairment. Hence, you're not seeing it in 2015-16, and you will not see it going forward. The third question that I would like to respond to regarding the Treasury report that reflects 7 billion that we need before 31st March 2017. You are right, that report is saying of the makeup of the 7 billion is 4.5 billion of the loans that are maturing between now and 31st March. That's 4.5. And that 4.5 already is backed up by government guarantees. So when we're refinancing that, we don't need new guarantees. And we need then from the 4.7 that we received in September, we'll only utilize 2.5 billion as a working capital. So the 4.7 that we received is sufficient for the company in the next 12 months. And I would like to highlight that the 12 months that was defined was up to September 2017, and the 4.7 billion will be sufficient. The third question is on the BNP, whether the company misrepresented these members in this committee. The management has not misrepresented on giving information. I would just like to highlight one thing. This BNP was appointed on the 11th of March 2016 to be the transaction advisors of the company. At the time that BNP was appointed, BNP had a valid FSP license, and that was the critical criteria for the company to be our transaction advisor. We learned during our due diligence, again, the mandate for the transaction advisor initially excluded the sourcing of funds. Because of events that happened, we ended up increasing the scope of BNP to source the funds. We then learned that the BNP FSB license was then suspended on the 26th of April. So at the time of awarding, which is the 11th of March 2016, BNP had a valid FSB license. We then terminated the appointment in July after we've learned that FSB has suspended their license. Thank you, Chairperson.
Anybody else? Chairperson, you want to say that?
Thanks, Chairperson. I'll ask the CEO to speak after him. Thank you.
The CEO appears okay, Honourable Chairperson. I would like to thank each and every member of this committee for the questions and the robustness of every area that you have touched on, which talks to the performance of the airline, our national pride, and I think it is still revered as such in the world. In the continent, we are also loved. But yes, Honourable Member, I did not say we are number one, but I'm saying the most revered. We are number two.
Fine, carry on. It's only 5 minutes left.
I'll be very short. But the questions that have been highlighted, I'm going to summarise just a few. Honourable Chairperson, there were decisions that were taken 18 years ago that are still affecting the airline. And they have weakened the balance sheet. The balance sheet can never be attended to and strengthened within a short space of time. The second area that I would like to allude to, which I request this committee to assist us with, can we give you a presentation so that you know what we are doing in addressing those historical challenges that we inherited? I am by no means distancing myself from challenges at SAA. And my acceptance of the appointment at SAA means accepting the challenges as they are, but dealing with those challenges, which we are doing. The third question, I'm not answering a question that has been raised by different people, but another very, very serious question that has been raised by Dr. Kwan, Honorable Member. Is the consequence when people do not do the right thing? When KPIs are not met? You are doomed if you take any measure against anyone who does not perform. You are also doomed if you do. I get criticized by this very committee, some members. Last time I was here, I was told that I do as I please. But that is the reason why some of the people are acting in position, because people have been found doing wrong things. I also would like some serious discussions that are honest discussions. There are a lot of interests at SAA. I am now a victim of transformation, and people want to say transformation is corruption. There is institutionalized corruption at SAA. We are dealing with those things. I'm not going to sit here and highlight and point at certain people. I am trying to be broad-shouldered so that we deal with issues that are there. When you like, you can take my number and ask me, who is eating at SAA? I will tell you. I will tell you who is eating. And I also would like to challenge, with your permission, Honorable Chair, with your permission, I would like Honorable Shivambo to take me to court for the allegations that he's putting on the table, that I'm bullying people. I'm bullying a board, I'm doing this. I would like to be in court as well for the jet fuel supply tender that he says, I have my people that I'm putting there. I deliberately, Honorable Chairperson, in dealing with issues of transformation, because the Honorable Deputy Minister has alluded to the fact that we need to first stabilize the airline. But my view, which was my view then before we got these 11 conditions that his the Honorable Deputy Minister is alluding to, my view is that we still buy goods and services at SAA, even if the company is not stable, but we are buying jet fuel for over 10 billion rand per annum. And historically, 82 years, it's only 5 companies that are benefiting from that. And if the government is serious about transformation, addressing issues of unemployment, inequalities, poverty, we will be able to give what Honorable Shivambo is saying, that I give names of people. I would like that to be in a written form given to me. This is what I've given, Chair. I've given military veterans. I've never given the name of a military veteran. I've given people with disabilities. I've never given the name of people with disabilities. Youth and women, those four categories, we have openly put them forward to the management. The management is here. I've never touched nor put my hands. I am an experienced director. Maybe people will talk about King 3. I know it when it was still King 1. Lastly, I need to say this. I've never touched anything to do with procurement. I've never signed anything. Personally, I approve within the delegation of the board. If we are not to approve, we send it back. Here is the CEO sitting next to me. But a classical example for the benefit of this board, of this honorable committee, is this. We were sitting at the board induction, the new board induction, for 2 days inducting the board. I'm sitting with the top leadership of SAA. And by the way, if we are talking leadership challenges, we are not talking about the board. We are talking about people that are acting in positions. As a consequence of certain things, people putting us in position where we lose 300 million, 300 million per annum. Then you deal with those people. We were sitting at the board induction for 2 days. At that board induction, the three executives that are here can attest to this. We are sitting around, the business day is writing exactly what we are talking about, and the CFO was talking at the time. The slides that we were discussing at that particular induction were being written as first pages of business day. Now, we paused because we had to address the issues again, institutionalized wrongdoing, if I could put it that way. I asked the CFO, how does this important information around this induction get into the media? Now, the media had written that I bully people, I take cell phones from people, I bully people, I take notes. It is the media saying that. And I would like also to urge this committee to ask me, I will come and explain. Whatever the media is saying, it has nothing to do, it is not even any close to the truth. I've never bullied anyone, no, it is my character to bully people. When I ask questions, I ask, and I do what is right. The CFO says to me, this is the presentation we are doing here. Because at the board induction, I did not ask us to leave the cell phones outside. People got an opportunity to leak the information as it was being presented. Sensitive information that we're giving to the new board. And there was no one being bullied, but the information was out. It was written in the media. They were there. The last part, Honorable Chair, as I finish, I would like to say, 18 years ago, we did not have these new players in the domestic market. I raised this matter. I still request, Honorable Chair, be our partners, Honorable Members. Please, we request you, if you want to see change at SAA, let us present to you what would be policy issues, one of which is the open skies. It's a policy of this government, the open skies. Anyone can come here and remove SAA from wherever. And we are operating in silos. The government is operating in silos. The regulator is in another department, and another department is doing this, and another department is doing this. Home Affairs is talking about birth certificates and visas and issues like those. Those things go to our bottom line. But if we are to present this whole of state aviation policy framework, we will be able to be like Ethiopian Airlines. I did last time say Ethiopian Airlines guard jealously about its airline. Lastly, but not least, Honorable Menir has asked a very, very serious question about whether I speak to the Honorable President. I must say that I have applied to serve in a board in KZN. I never consult anyone. My CV talks to the experience. When I served at Absa Bank as a board member, I never asked the president. When I served at the DTI, it's a subsidiary in KZN, I don't ask anyone, and I don't need anyone to recommend what I can do and what I can offer. This incompetent chairperson is the brainchild of the Airbus deal swap that has saved us a 1.9 billion. That swap deal was my brainchild to say, let us move from the A320-200 to A330 so that we avert those impairments, as it were, and all the losses that we are incurring. But when we proposed the Airbus deal, it became a corrupt Airbus deal. It became cronies of men. Chair, as a citizen of South Africa, I'm asking just for your indulgence. I would like this committee, as a custodian of PFMA, to review the PFMA so that it guides us, because we are not politicians. Give us the surnames of people that should not do business with state-owned airlines. or enterprises, sorry. Give us the surnames. If Mainir must not do business with SAA, give us those names. If Ramaphosa and his generations to come should not do business with SAA, give us that. And it's a review that must be done and seriously dealt with. I sit with people on the plane. I've never interacted with the Guptas. I don't know them. I've never interacted with them. I sit with people on the plane. And if a person says, I am a Gordon, it means I must jump and say, don't give me your business card because you are a Gordon. If I sit with a Mandela, I must run away. Don't sit next to me. Don't give me your company profile. The good thing that I do, Honorable Chair, you give me your company profile, I take it to the CEO. I pass it on because I don't have shelves in my house to keep people's company profile. But I tell people I don't get involved in tenders, but I get involved in issues of transformation. We will do what we ought to do as the board and what we're supposed to do. The airline is in safe hands. We're not going to collapse the airline, and we've never collapsed it. It's still soaring in the sky, it's still winning the awards under this leadership of an incompetent chairperson. We must be sincere, we must be honest. Some of the members of parliament are partners to companies that we should not advertise and give people with disabilities an opportunity. They are partners with those that cannot allow the MKMVA, people who fought for the liberation of this country. We must be honest, because if we say we are not going to transform, we are going to be covering and ensuring that we protect certain individuals. If we are to protect certain individuals, let us be told. If it is now policy that a politically exposed person, PEP, under the FICA that is being proposed, or FIC that is being proposed, let us be told so that we know that if I meet any person with the surname of Mbeki, that surname should not do business with state-owned airlines. With your permission, Chair, I will submit the EY report and its recommendations. I have submitted all investigation reports to the National Treasury, all of them. I will also submit, if this committee can ask us, the fraudulent activities that we found in Sao Paulo, I will be very happy to share them with you than responding, Honorable Chair and Honorable Mainir, than responding to questions of whether I speak to any powers that be or not. I will be honored to tell you that when we investigated in Sao Paulo, revenues were not coming to SAA. Where were they going? No one has asked who has been charged for those revenues. In the country, country managers of all competing airlines with us, if, for instance, you are flying, Emirates is flying to Zambia. In Zambia, Emirates will put an Arabian person of origin or UAE person will be the country manager. But SAA will pull out all South African country managers in our outstation. Why have we done so? Because you are now hiring just about anyone, and also we have these agencies called GSA, Global Sales Agencies, that are collecting our revenue through ticket sales. Ticket sales, we are auditing, we are forensically investigating that. Hence, I'm telling you about ghost employees. Did you know we're not flying to Florida, but we have got a call center there full of over 50 people that are full-time employees in Florida, but we don't fly there. We've got only one call center in the world. SAA has got one call center, but there is a contingent. How did I know this? But again, how did this committee know that 24 billion benefits 2%? In the past time you've been members of parliament, you never knew this, up until the incompetent Dudumieni became the chairperson. Honorable Chair, I thank you. This is not a prestigious chair. This is not a prestigious chair to chair the airline, but it is joy to see the contribution that one is making. But it is not joy when young people undress me in the presence of my children watching. It is not joy. And my husband is waiting for the term that when I step down, we can then take on those people that keep undressing me in public and calling me Zuma. I thank you, Chair.
There are certain things which I think are highly objectionable that we might need to attend to what the chairperson has been saying now.
Floyd, I'm chairing.
It's up to you. You're the chairperson since 2012. You've been in the board since 2009.
Yeah.
And you're coming here to get about 2% procurement rate. It's your responsibility.
No, Floyd.
Why do you try to ask
Floyd,
about
no.
It's you.
I'm asking the meeting.
Who's responsible for
Floyd, that? Floyd, you can speak to us. This meeting, do you want to extend it for another half an hour? If so, let's agree and then let's allocate the time.
No, Chair, I think we are done with the meeting.
Now,
where is the transformation? If it's 2% procurement, we have
Floyd,
been there, you have been
speaking,
meeting, you have been steering the ship.
Floyd.
Where is the transformation?
Floyd,
which you are defending yourself and everything else there.
Put it
and
in writing,
would bring
Floyd.
The information about
Floyd.
Your submission of the names of people that you gave people who are supplying
jets.
We're not going to do that.
Speak, Mr. Lees, we're not allowing Floyd to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are a number of questions that haven't been answered.
Okay, can I just say what I was going to say? Firstly, it's agreed we don't continue, but nothing stops you from engaging, and he's a member of Parliament, he can hold you to account in the himself, but you know, that nothing stops him. So you can make an arrangement to have tea with him somewhere and sort this out. Secondly, can I draw one attention to what a chairperson has to do? I think you know it, right? I'm addressing the manager in particular. You cannot come to Parliament, whoever you are, whether you're a DG or a minister, and misrepresent. So on the OTA issue, you are covered. But on the issue Mr. Lees raises, that's compulsory. You have to reply, because he says, in the one document given to Mr. Minister Nene, you said one thing. In another to us, you said, that thing is non-negotiable. Do you want to quickly reply now? I think in fairness, there are media people who are not necessarily going to read what you say. So in a nutshell, reply to that, because that misrepresentation issue cannot be allowed. In respect of the other questions, Antonia does a very good job. She writes down all the questions. I think Gloria helps her. And then what we're going to do is we'll submit the questions to committee members in the next 48 hours, and you can add further questions. But the focus when we come back, as agreed by the majority at least, is going to be, say, about 30% of the time, at most 50% of the time, on your quarterly financials. This will be in the first week of March. The remainder of the time is on answering the questions we have raised, and we'll send it to you a month beforehand on the issue of extending, it can't be 2%, more African pilots, black pilots, Africans in particular, where's your long-term strategy, you know, even if it's not complete. So those things. Now, hang on. Now I'm saying that's the direction we are taking, right? Now, on the issue of Mr. Lees, I'm coming to you, Floyd, after Tandy. Can you reply quickly? How come you got two discrepant figures? Is there such a word as discrepant? What you mean is two inconsistent figures. Yes.
Honourable Chair, with your permission, as we committed last time, we will commit, we did not do justice to these questions. They were very, very key questions that we needed to give justice to and ensure that we answer to, but the time has not permitted. But can we then ensure that we give timelines that will give you in 10 days, will give you the response? Thank you.
Why don't you just wait for our questions? So, 48 hours, is that fine, Antonia? You'll have the questions ready by Friday morning, Friday noon. We'll send it to members, and you'll have up till Tuesday, or make it Wednesday morning. And then within, let's say next Wednesday, within 10 days of that. So we put all the questions, including those that you felt were not answered. Tandy?
Okay, I'm not going to rearrange my questions that I believe have not been answered. I take it.
And remember, you can add the questions here if they're not there.
The issue I wanted to get on is just to get the meeting to agree that
We will have to look at the reviewed turnaround strategy at least by February and consider the issue of the cost base that I've raised.
Yeah.
And so, but also consider the suggestion I made about the AG's role. In order to...
Are you repeating your questions?
No, I'm not saying they must answer the questions. Yeah, I'm just reminding them.
No, that's not your job. That's Antonio's job. Then everybody's going to remind the committee of the questions they asked. Okay, can I just have Floyd then we'll round up? What's your point, Floyd, if it's something
new? I think you know, the response of the incompetent chair. Just quickly,
yeah.
You must listen to me then. We need an explanation on why 2% of the procurement is black people. It's her responsibility, one.
Yeah.
The institutionalized corruption that she speaks about, which is in SAA, it's her responsibility as well. How do you preside over an institution that's got institutional corruption? It's her responsibility. She must be held accountable. The issue of the ghost employees in 50
we agree on all that.
We need an explanation on that.
Yeah, we can ask
the Sao Paulo office,
no,
we need an explanation as well.
No,
from
you don't have any more rights.
Because the chairman
you
of
will
the
have
board
a chance from Friday to Tuesday or Wednesday to put your questions down. Please. You have no more rights than anybody else. Makosi, and you claim to be a socialist, you should know that more than everybody else. Right.
Chair, no, what I want you to get from the board is the new business model that they are going forward for.
Yeah, that's a
and
new point.
Also,
good.
You need to link that. I notwithstand
that's
what
a new
the
point,
minister
yeah.
said, I still feel that transformation cannot be compromised.
No, we agree.
In the process, and transformation does not equate loss of profitability and so on.
No, we agree. Yeah, absolutely agree. Thank you very much. Thank you, board chair. Oh, you want to say something?
I would like to give comfort to the honourable members that the Auditor General will, for the first time, start auditing SAA. Thank you. AG will be auditing SAA from now onwards. Thank you.
And can you put a plug there at SAA to say that Tandi Tobias Pokola, thanks to her prodding, that she can bring a great-grandchildren there to see it. Thank you, Chairperson, DM, and the board, and the board members, and the management. We shall see you first week of March, probably. Thank you, bye.
Gosh.